Senate local government will come to order. Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Senator Boltman. Senator Pope.
Excused.
Here.
Senator Trevis.
Here.
Mayor.
Here.
Senator Mandeville.
Here.
Senator Bogner.
Excused.
Senator Zolnikov.
Here.
Chairman Friedel.
Here. Looks like we have a quorum. We are waiting for our sponsors to show up, so we will stand at ease. Thank you. We will now bring local government back into order. Ms. Senator, we will now open up the hearing on Senate Bill 558. Senator, would you care to open on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just catching my breath here. Felt like I was running through an airport just now. So, Senator Shane Morjo, spelled M-O-R-I-G-E-A-U. And I represent Senate District 48 out of Missoula County. And today I have before you Senate Bill 558, a bill to require U.S. currency to be accepted in Montana. And, you know, I'll just start out saying, you know, the days of being frustrated, because there was moments where I was frustrated because businesses would only accept cash. And nowadays, that's completely being flipped on its head. You know, I've had constituents come forward to me now on numerous occasions, whether it's a mom who told me a story of her kid going to buy a hot cocoa at a resort and being rejected with the cash that they brought up to the stand to buy a drink, an individual not being able to buy a piece of furniture with cash, or a person who told me they went to a dealership and the dealership would only wouldn't let them buy a vehicle with cash because the company only wanted them to finance it. So, you know, it's interesting, you know, how that's starting to change. And nowadays, many payment companies are pushing a cashless movement because they just simply make more money on those transaction fees. And it's even got to the point now where many of these payment companies have started providing short-term funding to businesses that agree to stop accepting cash from the customers too. So they're basically doing a pay-to-play with them sort of thing. And who's it hurting? It's hurting customers and consumers in Montana. And, you know, I get the arguments that companies, you know, will sometimes want to use those systems to kind of streamline things, keep records, you know, save time or not touch money, those sorts of things. But, you know, honestly, I don't really think it's that hard to wash your hands, use some hand sanitizer. You know, systems can be finicky. They freeze up. I don't know how many times you've been in a line where the thing doesn't work, it doesn't work, or it freezes up on you altogether. So, you know, I don't think those arguments really hold water, so to speak. But, you know, I do think companies often use the cashless systems to just track their purchases and the sales to manage their books. And I get that. But, you know, I guess my question to all of you would be is, are the days of cash is king over? And, you know, for me, this is America where we can buy stuff with U.S. currency. Our money, we should be able to buy stuff with our currency. If you, you know, pull a dollar bill out, it says on it, on our currency, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. And I think that should be honored in Montana. You know, and there's nothing, I will just say there is nothing in law that requires, although there's supposed to be, it's legal tender that can be accepted, there's nothing that mandates that our legal tender be accepted. So, you know, this bill is about equity, privacy, and personal choice. I think it empowers everyone to be a part of the economic life of Montana. I personally have family members, I'm sure many of you do as well, who don't use banks. They just candidly, they don't trust banks, especially some of them after seeing some banks failing. I think not everyone also has access to credit, lines of credit or online tools. And a cashless society could really leave a lot of folks behind, in my opinion. Some individuals, and I've heard this from a lot of folks, who they just prefer to carry cash and use cash for their transactions. So being able to pay in cash really does allow you to be able to participate in economic opportunities, but it also protects your privacy in Montana as well. It eliminates the ability for government or anyone to be able to track you and your purchases. It eliminates the ability of merchants being able to track you. Some folks have even had traumatic fraud issues with credit cards or debit cards, and they just prefer not to deal with that particular headache and the risks that are associated with having their card information stolen and having fraudulent transactions. It's happened to me a bunch of times. I don't know how people get that information a lot of times, but I remember a couple of years ago, someone in a Midwest state apparently liked fried chicken, and they went to, like, think about six different fried chicken stores on my credit card as a stolen card. So that was a fun one to try and call the company and dispute. So it was chicken and then massages is what the person ended up doing for the day. So, you know, so there's that as well. So, you know, a lot of individuals can just be left out of the new cashless world that we have. You know, younger generations, a lot of them just don't have bank accounts or don't have credit. And older generations, a lot of them don't have smartphones. They don't trust it, or they are just not comfortable with that or in new technology. In 2017, 6.5% of all households didn't have bank accounts, which I think that number is actually higher now, but that would have been around 72,000 Montanans if you applied that average to Montana. And a survey in 2019 said over 7.1 million Americans didn't have bank accounts. So In my opinion, this is going to be very supportive of local Main Street businesses. Many folks don't like using their cards for transactions online. They'd rather go take their cash to local merchants and in their Main Street businesses in their local communities. And let's face it, the argument that they can go and find another store if that one won't take their cash, I don't think that's a fair argument, because in a lot of our small towns, there aren't multiple options, right? There's one feed store, there's one grocery store. There's just not a ton of options in a lot of rural communities. So I'll end with this. Our currency says, in God we trust, that physical cash does mean something to people. It means security and trust. And I think let's make sure cash stays king. And I hope you pass and support this bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We will now go into testimony. We will go with proponents first. Are there any proponents on Senate Bill 558 in the room or in the hallway?
Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Pepper Peterson, P-E-T-E-R-S-E-N. I am the president and CEO of the Montana Cannabis Guild. Cannabis cannot use banks. You know, like if Northwestern Energy did not accept cash, my employees may not be able to pay their electric bill. If they can't go to Domino's Pizza or a pizza place and spend cash, then they may go hungry that night. Let's not force our citizens to transact with international bank companies who sometimes begin to impose very interesting rules. You know, recently, the banking companies were attempting to track all gun purchases. And so these people don't necessarily share our values as Montanans, and forcing Montanans to go through these institutions that might say, you can't make this purchase. We're just not going to allow you because that's part of our policies. You know, they're attempting to do that in some cases. Some of the larger cities like New York City have experienced these exact issues, and they've taken these actions. They have made sure that they put requirements in place so that businesses will take cash, because it is a huge problem for folks that are visiting town that might not have any idea. You know, we have a huge tourism population here. Let's make it easy for them to do business if they don't want to use their cards, or they just, you know, if they want to use cash, it is legal tender for all transactions in this country. Let's make sure that we live up to that in Montana, and that we present that opportunity for everyone to participate in the economy, regardless of how they feel about banks, et cetera. We ought not have a litmus test of participation for our citizens to participate in the economy that involves private companies. If you can get money, then you ought to be able to spend money. We appreciate this. We hope you'll do pass this.
Thank you. Next proponent on in the room or in the hallway for Senate Bill 558. Seeing none. Ms. Kelly, do I have any online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. We will now go to opponents. Are there any opponents in the room or in the hallway for Senate Bill 558? Seeing none. Ms. Kelly, do I have any online?
No, Mr. Chair.
While we're at it, do we have any informational witnesses online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Are there any informational witnesses in the room in the hallway for Senate Bill 558? Seeing none, committee questions. Senator Travis.
Mr. Chair, just for the sponsor real quick. Mr. Chair, Representative, it looks like you took care of hotels in line 21 and 22. Is that accurate as far as the security deposit and credit card number for damages and expenses?
Mr. Like Chairman, yes, that's correct.
Perfect. Yeah.
And I didn't go into this a lot either, but I wanted to make sure this is clear that it also applies to political subdivisions of the state as well. I think that's important, especially for folks who, again, prefer to pay with cash for all the reasons I've already said. I think it's equally as important.
I guess it does bring up one more question since you mentioned it, Mr. Chair, Representative. I think that's a good idea. Obviously the county treasurers aren't here opposition, but have you heard anything from, like, say, county treasurers who might be accepting a decent amount of cash for, say, tax payments?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chivas, I haven't heard anyone complain about that. I understand that, you know, For some people, it can be easier to simply take a card and, you know, swipe it and charge all of us a 2% transaction fee. But honestly, I would prefer, I don't know how many times I came into a place and, you know, especially at our local DMV, for example, right? It has a percentage, it says it very clearly on the sign. And I think a lot of people liked, you know, a few hundred dollars for a new vehicle adds up pretty quick for people, right? So I think people really would like to have the choice to be able to still avoid those additional fees and pay what they're actually really supposed to be paying. And so as we kind of move to this cashless process that we've seen more and more, I think this will just ensure that that remains an option for people who, you know, for any of these reasons, whether they're low income or they just choose not to have a bank for whatever reason, and they just feel more comfortable with cash, it just ensures that they still have the ability to do that. And I would just say that, you know, a lot of people do like to have, you know, cards as well. So, you know, the folks who still have that preference can still do that.
Are there any other questions? I have one, Senator Morgeau. Senator Morgeau, do you, knowing that's obviously money is the situation, are you familiar with what it takes to get a bank account?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, usually you have to go into the bank, fill out a form. I haven't done it in a long time because I think I've had my same bank account for probably 20 years. Typically you have to have money to go in and start accounts as well. And, you know, you have to, in some places, you have to have a savings account to maintain a banking account so you don't incur fees and those sorts of things. So I think depending on the bank, they probably have various processes. But my understanding from when I did it is I had to have money to be able to open up the account, had to fill out a form.
Do you know of any of the barriers that you have to overcome? Say, for instance, if you have bad credit, would a bank allow you to have a bank account, or is that a barrier that is not one?
Can you repeat that again?
Essentially, what I'm saying is if you have bad credit, would a bank allow you to have a bank account at said bank?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that question.
Neither do I. Senator Zolikoff.
Mr. Chairman, I'll ask your question in a answering question. Senator Morgeau, do you know about how bank fees have increased, how they charge if you don't for savings accounts, and how if you don't have certain transfers and certain limits, or not limits, but I guess amounts that are higher than a certain amount, you get all these different cost fees and transactions in today's banking world?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Zolnikoff, yes, I'm aware of that. And if you don't maintain a certain amount in your account, you can incur fees for that.
Yes, or direct deposit. Thank you.
Or direct.
Get hit by Wells Fargo, $15 a month.
It's just a statement.
Senator Travis.
Statement, Mr. Chair. I called you representative. I apologize, Senator. And my aunt loves this bill, or she wanted one like this to be running through here, so I'll definitely be supportive. I'm sure we could save that for EA, but we can talk about it more than I supposed to.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, Senator, would you clear closing your bill?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just real quickly, you know, that's a good point, the fees that are incurred just to be able to have that account. You know, for a lot of low-income Montanans, they incur another situation sometimes. People live paycheck to paycheck, and for them, it can be a dangerous situation if they overdraw on their account. And a lot of people like to have cash on hand so that they know exactly what they have, so that they aren't incurring, they're budgeting their money in that way, where they're not being surprised by overdraft fees and those sorts of things, and putting them in a really bad spot for their families. So, you know, I just think there's a lot of good reasons for why this bill just makes a lot of sense. I know that a lot of businesses like the ease of the cashless system nowadays, but I think for a lot of reasons, all the reasons you just heard me say, I just think it really makes a lot of sense to ensure that people have the ability to continue to use cash in Montana.
Thank you. This now closes the hearing on Senate Bill 558. Committee, while we are waiting for our next sponsor, does anybody have a heartburn on doing EA on this bill right now? That being said, local Senate government will now go into executive action. Senator Zolikoff, would you care to move my Senate bill?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 558 do pass.
Are there any amendments?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Henneman. Are there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like
Senator,
to...
Senator, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. There's a new trend called cash stuffing that's kind of fascinating because it's a very old trend where you have your envelopes of where you're going to budget, and it keeps people when they on their budget based on what their expenses are expected versus today's new modern world of credit cards or other things along those lines where you can lose track so quickly and we have so many things that are automatically deposited. And so this new old trend is actually helping people reduce major debts that they're living with. So this type of policy really allows folks like that who are getting on top of their finances to be able to not only follow through but excel and get ahead in life. So I love this type of policy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Travis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now that we're in the EA portion of the show here, I do definitely appreciate this. My aunt had some concerns. She cut out a little newspaper article about kind of how some things are going in some places and was concerned that she may not be able to use currency in a lot of places to buy common staples. So I think currency really that we've established as a nation is really core to our trade and core to then our ability to be free. So I think this is a big deal.
I'd like to make a couple comments. I think that there's a couple things I have issues with. I know that I'm a huge proponent on technology and things going forward, but there are some things that I do get concerned on, especially when it comes to this. Some concerns I have were people that can't have bank accounts and then how they're going to be able to pay for things. So having the ability to use cash, I find it fascinating that we have to have a bill like this to actually encourage through law to use our currency. The other issue is I think what ever since we've had personal credit, I think that's one of the main reasons why we've had a serious issue in this nation. And I do agree with the good senator to my left that utilizing this type of tender is actually a better way to help yourself do your own financing and making sure you don't spend as much money, because once you open the envelope and there's nothing in there, you've run out of money. Whereas a lot of times people use credit cards and lines of credit to extend their paycheck. And I think that's where a lot of the personal issues we are in this country with debt. So with that being said, are there any other comments or questions before I ask for a roll call vote? Seeing none, Ms. Lorna, can I have a voice vote, please?
Senator Boldman?
Senator Boldman, aye by proxy.
Senator Pope?
Pope, aye by proxy.
Senator Dunwell?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Vermeer?
Yes.
Senator Mandeville?
Aye by proxy.
Senator Bogner?
Aye by proxy.
Senator Zolnikov?
Yes.
Chairman Friedel?
Yes.
9 voted yes. 0 voted no.
9 voted yes, 0 voted no. Senate Bill 558 has been passed out of committee. Committee, our next sponsor is here, so we will go out of executive action and go back into hearing. We will now hear the hearing on House Bill 35. Representative, would you care to open on your bill, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I did notice there's a pirate in the room.
Arr.
Members of the committee, this is a local government interim committee bill. During the local government committee studied a lot of issues surrounding local sewer and water districts. And part of that was a revision of some of the some of the code that reflects how those districts operate. And the thing we discovered in the law that governs them is there are a lot of unusual, unwieldy worded items over time in a code that was probably at least 60 years old and required some rework. The old law used to require these boards to have, if they were a part of a municipality, they had to have an extra board member nominated by the municipality, and then the board would put them in, and the same for a county. If they were in a county, they had to add a board member. If they were actually in two counties, they'd have to add two board members. And so the whole appointing process was a little sketchy. And so we actually did quite a bit of work on it and looked for some solutions to the problem. And the problem we had is some of our solutions lean toward one particular municipality and water district. And we found that things we tried to do for that municipality created problems for the other 820 districts around Montana. So it became kind of a balancing act to figure out what would work for everybody and what would solve some of the problems. So if you look at the bill, on page 2, it talks about the construct of the boards, and it's basically the same of the basic board. And it says that the board of directors must consist of 5 elected members or 3 elected members if there are 10 or fewer qualified electors in the district. And then it talks about the boundaries. If the boundaries of the district include a municipality, the board may include one additional, and here's the change, non-voting ex officio member as provided in Section 3 for each municipality located within the district. Each non-voting ex officio member must be appointed by the mayor of the municipality for which the non-voting ex officio member is allowed. And then it says if the boundaries of the district include unincorporated territory, the board may include one additional non-voting officio member as provided in Section 3 appointed by the Board of the County Commissioners within the unincorporated. And the interesting there is it's a may. They may allow one to be appointed. A lot of those changes were insisted upon by the other districts in the state because they wanted the option whether or not to allow them into their boards. So just as a compromise, that's how the construct came out by the members of the board. So on page 3, it goes a little farther. A person appointed by a board of directors as a non-ex officio member as provided in Section 3 must meet the requirements of this section, except the person may reside outside the boundaries of the district and is not required to own property in the district. The thinking there was if the municipality wanted to appoint a member of their staff, for instance, an engineer from their water department or some person that could provide some expertise for the board or the district, that would be an option. So generally, all the board members have to reside within the water district. The other part that was hard to follow was how the terms of service were created. It was like after the fourth Sunday of the third full moon, it was really wonky. So that part says the term of office begins on the first Monday of the month following the date of the elector's election or appointment. A director or elected or appointment shall hold office until the term of the office of the director's successor begins. Then on the fourth page are just a couple other distinctions. It says the mode of appointment of a director, including the appointment of non-voting ex officio members by the board or the county, must be by a certificate of appointment by the mayor issued by the Board of County Commissioners and transmitted to the directors of the district. And on the bottom, on line 25, it says a vacancy of a non-voting ex officio board member must be filled by appointment by the respective appointing authority. So that's the highlights of what was changed. And like I said, it's a committee bill. And I'd like to see it pass it just for the sake of the committee. And the changes, particularly that affect the other smaller districts in the state that needed some guidelines on terms and all those other things. So anyway, I'll sit for questions and hear if there are proponents and opponents.
Thank you. We will now go into hearing on House Bill 35. We will go with first the proponents of House Bill 35.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. couple members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. My name is Steve Turkowitz. T is in Tom, U-R-K-I-E-W-I-C-Z. I represent the city of Billings. We are in support of this bill, but would like to improve it a little bit. One of the things that you heard earlier this session was House Bill 675, which had to do with the Heights Water District in Billings, in the Billings area, or mostly in the city of Billings, and how that was constructed and looking at ways for potential consolidation. Along those lines, and we understand the hard chore the interim committee went through in trying to decide how to do all these because of the many, many different districts, and may have come up with a solution for the committee to consider would be to look at language that's on page 2 in terms of, page 3, I guess. I can't even see at this angle. In terms of the municipalities, page 2, somewhere in, I would say,
8 through 11.
Between 8 and 11. Some language of the line recognizing a municipality or a water district that was majority of its residents were also in the municipality, and the source of water for the water district was sole source from the municipality, to have a board member on there, not as a may but shall from the city. So we got that. In other words, got Billings Heights, 65-70%, maybe even more of the residents of the city of Billings are on that water system. They get that water from the district, but the city is the only source of water for that, and I believe that may be the only instance that we have that in the state. So we don't want to mess up the rest of the work that was done by the interim committee, but at the same time would appreciate consideration for a one size doesn't fit all in this particular case. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Next proponent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Bryson. That's B-R-Y-S-O-N. I'm here on behalf of the Montana Association of Counties. Mr. Chair, committee members, I'd like to thank the interim committee for the work that they did, and especially because it, I think, staved off 15 or 20 special district bills from coming before you and having the debate that we've had over the last couple of sessions. I do agree that this is a good compromise bill. I think it addresses what some of the concerns that were brought to the interim committee, and that what that representation should look like if a water and sewer district, which is its own standalone legal entity, a political subdivision of the state, wanted to have representation from counties. I'm here on the behalf of counties, and so it's very clear if they want that, there's an ex officio non-voting ability for the Board of County Commissioners to appoint somebody to that role. I would encourage you to pass this bill. If there were amendments, I would like to have the ability to read those amendments and look at the implications of what they might be, but we support this bill as it is right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent. Seeing none, Ms. Kelly, do I have any proponents online for House Bill 35?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. We will now go to opponents. Opponents for House Bill 35 in the room or in the hallway? Seeing none, Ms. Kelly, do I have any online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Well, we're at it. Do we have any informational witnesses online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Are there any informational witnesses in the room? Seeing none, committee, questions? Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Brewster, good to see you again and good to work with you on this. You did a lot of work on this during the interim.
Thank you.
So my question is, what do you think about Mr. Turkowitz's idea for an amendment?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think it would upset 820 other local water districts, just to be honest with you. They were pretty adamant about what they wanted as part of this, and this was the compromise that we came together with to put it together. And I'm not sure they loved all of it at all, and I know the city of Billings didn't love all of it. But this is what we thought we could pass. It would provide some useful parts for the all of those water districts and the city of Billings. And so what you have before you was that compromise.
Thank you for explaining that. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? I have one question for the Mr. Turkowitz. I hope I said that right.
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Mr. Turkowitz, so just kind of so I can wrap my head around it. So the amendment or proposed language you're talking about is adding to this that in the event a water district gets its source of water, not from a natural source, but from, say, a municipality, that municipality could have a voting member on that board. And that's it? Or am I missing something?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's it.
Now, another follow-up question. Now, if that were to happen, my understanding is that there's only how many water districts are there that have this situation, apparently?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is one.
Thank you, Mr. Turkowitz. Could I have a question from the sponsor?
Mr. Chair?
Representative, no, I just want to make sure. I know you and I have had this conversation many a times in a couple sessions now. Are there any other districts that are unique to the one that gets their municipal water or gets their water from municipal?
Mr. Chair, no, there are not. There is only one.
So, Mr. Representative Brewster, so if that amendment were, if that language is put in there, would that be an issue, or do you think that would be a heartburn for? Because it sounds like what it would do is, if that language is in there, the 600 and some odd, would you say 684 other water districts would literally be exempt from this?
Well, Mr. Chair, if you put the qualifiers on it as were expressed, that it was only for a single water or a water district that bought its water from a municipality and had more than, say, 70% of its ratepayers in the municipality, it would be directed only at that one district.
And
frankly, I don't think the rest of them would care.
Gotcha. Thank you, Mr. Brewster. Senator, Legislator, Jesus, I'm going home.
You'll get there, my friend.
Representative Brewster, thank you. Getting there. Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative, would you care to go? Senator, Representative, would you care to close in your bill?
Sure will, Senator. This is a good bill. You know, it's your bill after this hearing. You can do whatever you want with it. But I would admonish you to protect the other 820 districts if you can. They like the rest of the stuff in this bill. So with that, I'll close.
Thank you, Representative. We are now closing the hearing on House Bill 35. We will take action in future. Committee, I lost one of my... We will go to recess real quick when we get our next... Oh. Okay. We will now go into hearing on House Bill 304. Representative, would you care to open on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Forgive me if I'm winded. I just ran up the stairs. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Representative Jedediah Hinkle, and I represent House District 67, which is mostly the Belgrade area of Gallatin County. Today, I bring before your consideration House Bill 304 requiring air filtration for marijuana cultivators and manufacturing facilities. During the fall of 2021, I was contacted by a representative in Gallatin County who is receiving a lot of complaints from business owners near marijuana cultivators about the strong outdoor smell. This was affecting their ability to conduct business, draw in and retain customers. I remember I was told that one of the complaints came from a hairdresser. The marijuana smell was so strong, just walking down a sidewalk, a person would be inundated with it. I did not think much on the issue at the time until last summer. I happened to be working in that area helping a friend with some landscaping. I was at least a quarter mile from any other building. During the thunderstorms, the wind shifted, and there it was, the strong smell of marijuana. I thought to myself, wow, if I am this far from a building where marijuana is growing and was as strong as it was during the winds of a thunderstorm, I can't imagine what it would be like for businesses and residences closer by. This is why you now have before you House Bill 304. When investigating laws for marijuana filtration to other states, I had a few different options to pattern this bill from. Some of the options were very onerous regulations, even dictating what type of filtration system needed to be installed and how it was to be certified. This bill does not dictate what type of filtration needs to be installed. That would be left up to the cultivator or manufacturer themselves. The language in the bill requires that these entities to have air filtration system or another means of odor neutralization to reduce odors and sets a standard for the smell outside the premises. The odor standard set in the bill was an amendment put on in the House committee that mirrors a standard used in Colorado. Because the requirements for the ventilation system are very basic, this allows local governments to address the issue further if their counties or cities necessitate it. The language in this bill only includes indoor growing operations, as outdoor growing operations cannot filter their air. Additionally, it is indoor growing operations that have very concentrated odor that is being released into the outdoor air, and these facilities are often located near other businesses or residences. The bill also states that this filtration requirement does not apply to any indoor manufacturer or cultivator that is over a mile from any other residence or business. In an amendment I am preparing, I will have language to grandfather these facilities in so that in the future, if a subdivision or business moves in next to them, they will not be required to all of a sudden set up an air filtration system. Also, in the same amendment, I will be addressing a few other issues. If you notice the fiscal note, you will see the estimated fiscal impact over $180,000, and that requires two FTE. I could not for the life of me figure out why there would be additional FTE needed since the Department of Revenue are already conducting inspections of the facilities. I found out it is because the department thought they would be required to test the air every time there was a complaint somewhere in the state. My intent with this bill was for the department to test the air only when they are conducting the inspections that they already do. This amendment will reflect that and should cut out additional FTE out of the fiscal note. Additionally, to address concerns of lawsuit, if we do keep the odor standards in the bill, and if the department cannot determine who violated the odor levels in areas where manufacturers are in close proximity, the language would allow them to just inspect the air filtration system to make sure it is in working order. And that should address that issue in the fiscal note. I have received a few questions on the costs associated with air filtration systems. My research has informed me that it seems carbon filter systems are the least expensive system. Generally, systems run about $10,000 on the lower end, but can increase depending on technology and how elaborate they get. Another quote I received was around $14,000. I tried to make this bill as least a restrictive start, and I am always open in ways we can sharpen it up and still address the issue. Since the House committee, I've been working closely with the Department of Revenue to make sure the law is in proper order for them as it pertains to the inspections. The amendment has not been finalized because we are still learning and may need to incorporate new language after this hearing. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will let the opponents and proponents testify and stand aside for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Show of hands in the room, who is here to speak in part on House Bill 304? Okay. What we will do is, for both proponents and opponents, I will give in room 10 minutes for both proponent and opponents. Online, I'll give you 5 minutes. Does that make sense? So in the room, you guys get 10 minutes. So you all get 10 minutes for proponents. Everybody gets 10 minutes for opponents. And then when we'll go online, I'll give them 5 minutes themselves. Does that make sense? Cumulative. I do. I mean, with all due respect to you, you guys are great, but that's a lot of time. With that being said, I will recommend that if you have a champion, I would probably let them go first. We will now go into testimony. We will start the clock on proponents. Anybody here as a proponent on House Bill 304, come up to the mic. Make sure you say your first name, spell your last name, and if you have an affiliation, let us know that.
Okay. Hello, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Jenisek. It's spelled with two L's. Last name is J-E-N-I-C-E-K. I'm here to represent myself because I live next to a marijuana grow. I live in the mountains in a rural area of Montana. My 20-acre property is bordered on three sides by Forest Service land. I've lived on this property for about 32 years. 5 years ago, some people from Oregon bought adjoining property and started a marijuana grow and have continued to expand their operation into another adjoining property. The county I live in did not notify me of this. There was no public hearing conducted, nor did I have any say in the matter. In addition, because this grow is outside any city limits, no local business license was issued for the grow. The smell of marijuana coming from the grow next to my property affects my enjoyment of my property, my quality of life, and who knows at this point how it affects the value of my property. I've had many days where I've had to smell the pungent smell of marijuana when working outside, sitting on my deck, or even when I open windows or screen doors in my house. Just the other day while working outside, I caught myself breathing through my mouth rather than my nose due to the strong smell of skunkweed coming from the grow next door. During the summer months, I have to use my air conditioning more often than I normally would due to the smell. In addition, a friend of mine who also enjoys walking the nearby Forest Service Trail has told me he smelled marijuana while hiking from as far away as a mile. I think this bill is a really good start to fixing this odor problem. However, I'd like to point out that we are only scratching the surface with this bill. More needs to be done to proactively combat the environmental impacts from this industry. If the chairman will allow it, I would like to provide the committee with a 2018 document from Michigan DEQ that provides a lot of educational information about the industry. It also lists on the back of it what other states were doing in 2018. Thank you for your time today. Please vote yes on House Bill 304.
Thank you. And if you'd like to provide that, go ahead and hand it to this good senator to your right. Next proponent. Are there any other proponents in the room or in the hallway for House Bill 304? Seeing none, Ms. Kelly, go ahead and let people online go ahead. And we'll switch to 5 minutes on that.
Mr. Chair, can I have one moment, please?
When you are ready, Ms. Kelly.
Thank you.
By the way, while we are waiting, if you are in the room with your phone on, either turn it off or silent it, or you'll buy cookies. Make sure that while we're waiting, I know some new people did come in. If you are here to testify, there are some ledgers out there. Make sure your name's on it with your affiliation. That way we can get you on the record. When you do come up to the mic, make sure you say your first name, spell your last name. And if you have an affiliation, go ahead and say that with it as well. Just putting in some extra cannon fodder here while we wait for Ms. Kelly to take care of things. She's awesome. And so we will go ahead and go to proponents online. Are you ready, Ms. Kelly?
Yes, all right. Mr. Chair.
We'll go with Grossfield first.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Zachary Grossfield, spelled G-R-O-S-F-I-E-L-D. I am a Montana resident of Sweetgrass County. From 2013 to 2016, I served as a Montana Highway Patrol state trooper based out of Columbus, Big Timber, and then Bozeman. Currently, I am a landlord of several properties around the state. My family owns a commercial strip mall building with 9 different tenants. One of our tenants is a daycare facility for children. All of our tenants pay good money to be able to rent a space to run a legitimate professional business. 2 buildings over from us, across the parking lot, is a warehouse-type building which manufactures marijuana. Every time our tenants and their customers, who are doing legitimate and professional business, walk from their car to their businesses, they have to endure the stench of marijuana. I think most of us would agree that, unless you are a user of marijuana who maybe naively believes the smells good or doesn't smell at all to those around them, it is not a pleasant odor, in fact, repulsive to the rest of us. Now, our 9 tenants do nothing to negatively impact the business of the marijuana growers across the parking lot, nor do they do anything to negatively impact any other business around them. But the marijuana growers do negatively impact business around them by virtue of the fact that they deal with a strongly smelling product. Sometimes the smell is strong enough that you can't get away from it, and you smell it whether you're inside the strip mall building or outside, and that is just not right. We've all had the experience of driving down the road on a beautiful summer day with our windows rolled down and enjoying the pristine, pure beauty of our state around us, and then had the moment spoiled because you drove by a marijuana grow facility and had to endure the smell of their operation. That is not right. Why should they have the unimpeded right to negatively impact the rest of us in that way? I used to drive past a chunk of acreage every day for work that was about 100 acres. One day it was purchased by the developer who developed the acreage into 5-acre lots. I think there were 20 of them in all. Pretty as you like, beautiful views, water and power and pavement to each lot. The 20 lots sold for around $230,000 to $280,000 per lot to individuals who no doubt were hoping to build their dream home there. I paid attention because we were considering doing the same. Well, thank God we didn't, because about a month after the last lot sold, kitty corner across the street from the development, a new big warehouse-type building went up and started growing marijuana. The smell of the marijuana became inescapable from anywhere in that new little subdivision. That was several years ago now, and to this day, there are only 3 homes that have been built there. That is not right. Why should marijuana growers have the unimpeded right to negatively affect our properties and property values in this way? Why should we, as citizens, customers, and business owners of the state of Montana, have to endure the stench of marijuana while walking or driving outside in this beautiful land that belongs to all of us? We shouldn't have to be afraid to buy a property or build a house or start a new business in case a neighbor gets a wild hair and decides to start to grow their own grow operation. Costco in the city of Bozeman expanded and they caused a lot more traffic, so the city required them to mitigate the problem by paying for a roundabout to be installed. If the state invokes eminent domain to pave or expand a highway through someone's property, they compensate.
There is other people online, yes, and you're chewing up their time as well.
Yeah, I apologize, Mr. Chair. I would ask that you support House Bill 304.
Thank you. Next proponent online.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Kelsey Conopy. That's K-E-L-S-E-Y-C-O-N-O-P-H-Y. As a homeowner that lives on a property adjacent to a marijuana grow facility, I urge you to vote in favor of HB 304. Similar to what the other advocates shared about the unpleasant smell, as well as the impact to our enjoyment of our own property, it has also negatively impacted the value of our largest financial asset, which is our homes, as well as has the potential to negatively impact our health in the long term. Contrary to what some members of the marijuana industry stated in the House hearing, multiple studies carried out by researchers across multiple states and countries have proven that odors from cannabis grow facilities cause long-term negative health issues, specifically stress-related respiratory and cardiovascular diseases. I've shared the meta study in my written testimony if you want to take a look at that. Additionally, I've also would like to point out that they will say that this is unenforceable and prohibitively expensive, which is also false. Other states with more strict measures in place have been able to successfully enforce their laws and advanced devices that make it possible to reliably measure particulate matter in the air without the need to rely on the nose exist. In addition, the average cost to comply for a large 360,000 cubic square foot facility, which is larger than the majority of facilities in Montana, would only cost $14,000 to $21,000 to implement, which would be a drop in the bucket for these large facilities. As I've confirmed with a provider that has implemented thousands of such filtration systems in facilities across the U.S. and the globe. Additionally, some supporters will say that we just have a backward mentality and have a personal issue with our industry, which is also false. I have no personal beliefs that cause me to have an issue with the marijuana industry. I don't even mind that there's one in my neighborhood. However, I do care when they are not able to be good neighbors, and I hope that a law like HB 304 can get passed to make sure that they're operating responsibly and not impacting the health and well-being, as well as happiness of the residents and businesses around them. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Go ahead and put on the next person, and I'll explain to the public when we get done why I asked in the next 2 minutes. Go ahead. I You might want to unmute yourself. Let's go on to the next proponent. We'll see if she can figure out her mic. While we're waiting for this to happen, I added 2 more minutes, and I'll give 2 more minutes to the opponents on this. Go ahead, next proponent, Mr. Brown.
Yes, my name is Marty Brown, last name B-R-O-W-N. I also live next to a grow facility. We bought our house back in 2014. It's been really nice living out where I do, and recently we've been having to deal with extensive smell of marijuana, just early in the morning, late in the evening. We cannot leave our windows open at night either without having this just throughout our home. I am very concerned that it's also impacted the cost of my, or the value of my home. And, you know, I have my granddaughters out here often, and they've even asked what that smell is. It's unfortunate. I am a proponent for HB 304. I'd ask that you support that.
Thank you. All right, is Ms. Inman ready?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Tim Inman. I've lived in Montana for the last 29 years. We bought some property 22 years ago and 19 years ago that adjacent the grower that moved into our area in 2019, roughly. At that time when we heard he was moving in, a few of us neighbors went over and visited with him and asked him about, told him about our concerns about the smell. He took us a tour of his building, which was very nice. He was very pleasant. And he assured us, and quote, he said, "You will never smell the smell of marijuana from my shop because it's 100% contained." Well, that worked out to start with, but then after he built his next 3 buildings and a greenhouse, take the greenhouse out because that's not going in, 3 buildings, the smell got so strong that we can't go outside to enjoy the view of the mountains, even the more grass, it's sickening. And I built my forever home in 2018 with a living quarters upstairs for my healthcare provider because this is the place I wanted to live the rest of my life. So I think that the growers need to give us our fresh air back. I think they're inconsiderate and irresponsible. And I think that they don't really care about our neighbors. I hope that they will consider being a good neighbor and proceeding with the filters, and I support Bill HB 304. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Next person. Sweet. Elevator music. Mr. McCausland, you're online.
All right, thank you. My name is John McCausland, M-C-C-A-U-S-L-A-N-D. I managed a small business. We bought a lot in 2009, built our building in 2014. When we moved in, there was no growers in our subdivision. We didn't have any smell. After the legalization of marijuana, we can smell it now constantly. We can't open our windows anymore to cool down our building in the evenings and the morning. I had to install a air conditioning unit for $4,000. When my customers do come in, they complain about the smell, and some of them have stopped coming in. And if I have people that don't come in, I lose business because of this. I'll just keep it short and sweet, and that's it.
Thank you. Are there any other proponents online, Ms. Kelly?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have a Jody.
Let them go on one more time. They got 30 seconds.
I asked them to unmute on my end.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Hi, my name's Jody Conopy, J-O-D-Y-C-O-N-O-P-H-Y. I live in Madison County. Sorry, I'm nervous. I live in Madison County, and I have been smelling the smell of the marijuana.
Ms. Canopy, do you support this bill? Or we've run out of time. I apologize.
I support the bill.
Thank you so much. We will now go on to opponents in the room. I will give you 10 minutes in the room. And since I give extra time online, I'm playing with timers. I'm going to give the opponents 10 minutes as well. That's what I gave them online. So when you saw 2 minutes popping up there, I was gauging this. So just reiterate, 10 minutes in here, which means 10 minutes, it's done. If you're online, be considerate of the next person. I do have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 online. So try to be as brief as possible. If you can only add anything new to the conversation, otherwise just say I'm in support or opposition of the bill. Thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Opponent. Chairman.
We are now on opponents in the room.
Members of the committee. Kate Holewa, C-H-O-L-E-W-A, MTCIA, Montana Cannabis Industry Association. I think with legislation, often it's the first question, you know, is it a problem? Is the bill an effective remedy? But I think there's another question involved with this bill. It started in House business. It's been sent to Senate local government because I think there's a question about, and you're the experts, is this a local government as opposed to a statewide issue? You know, is it a local government? Is it a problem in select places and no problem at all in other places? I'm not sure where the proponents from were all from in the House. It seemed like everyone was from Four Corners, that it's sort of a hot spot for the issue. Is this about, you know, more of a local nuisance issue, just like noise can be and can be addressed through ordinances where the issue arises? You know, or is it a statewide problem with a one-size-fits-all solution? Another question, does the state pass laws about odors? And does it pick out certain odors? The cannabis odor needs to be regulated, but the, you know, the sugar beets don't, or the tanning, you know, place doesn't. So I think that's another question in terms of what the state does. It does seem like the rest of the country thinks it is a local issue. The House Business Committee asked the department to bring them information about what other states do. I brought a copy of that, of what they passed out. There's not much there because there's not much there. In fact, there's Denver and then something from Oregon. The mechanism, so moving on from whether or not it's local issue or not, I would say then there's the mechanism, the nasal rangers, as you'll probably hear much about, referred to. I'll pass out something from the EPA Enhanced Air Sensory Guidebook 2022. Specifically says these should not be used for regulatory purposes. They are not reliable. So even if you take those out of the equation and just require air filtration, there's going to still be odors, and we'll be right back here. I also want to point out there's going to be uneven effects. I mean, outdoor being exempt, we support that completely. But it does take a group of people who have gotten grandfathered in and are the only ones who can grow outdoor, and it gives them yet another economic advantage. But like I say, we're not against that exemption. Also, there's an indoor facility across the street from an outdoor facility. So now this indoor facility is going to have a filter and control their odors when they're across the street from an outdoor facility. That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense either. Local government has lots of authority in the statute. Missoula, already has addressed this in their local government laws. We think that's where it needs to be addressed. We hope you'll take that into consideration. May I pass out those two items I mentioned?
Yes, ma'am. If you'd like to hand it to Senator Vermeer, he'll pass it around. Thank you.
And I'm sorry my stapler malfunctioned, but so be careful.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Pepper Peterson. I'm with the Montana Cannabis Guild, P-E-T-E-R-S-E-N. I'd like to, mirror everything Kate just said. We choose to move to rural areas for different reasons. Some people choose for the scenery. Some people choose because they just want to be left alone. They don't want to put up with traffic. Maybe they want to put an additional dwelling unit on their property, or maybe they want to slap a greenhouse up, or maybe they want a hot tub. Maybe they want to paint cars in their yard. Folks move to the country or outside of cities for a lot of reasons. One of those reasons is because they want to do what they want to do. In Montana cities, we have a lot of regulations. In the city I live in here, Helena, they've got regulations about what time you have to pull your garbage can off the street, And I'm sure that if people leave their garbage cans on the street in Clancy, it's just as much a problem as it is here in Helena. But they haven't established those local government procedures because they don't value them, or perhaps they've chosen not to for some other reason. So when you make the personal choice to choose your residence in one of these places, you choose the ups and downs. You personally have the freedom to put up a paint shop or cut wood or burn a giant pile of slash in your yard, if that's okay with you. You can't do those things in the city. So if you want to control what your neighbors are doing in a more complete manner, then you should probably move to one of those places where they have those local government elements in place. And, I empathize with folks who, have problematic neighbors. And our neighbor was not problematic growing up, but he had a pig farm. And let me tell you what, Memphis, Tennessee in July, brother, it gets in the house and it gets on you. We didn't complain come harvest because we always ate the barbecue, And I understand these folks may not participate in this economy, but the fact is they still also enjoy those freedoms on their property. There are mechanisms in place. There are local ordinances in place. There are conditional use permits that are given to folks, especially in the Gallatin Gateway area. I know I've talked to a lot of these merchants and the folks, and they said, hey, I had to go through a conditional use permit process. There's a process for this. There's a process for these complaints. There's a process for enforcement. If you live in a place that doesn't have those processes, it's probably because you've chosen not to incorporate or create a government, or maybe you just don't want to because you want to do what you want to do. The most problematic part of this legislation is in Section 3B. For purposes of this subsection 3, the Department may adopt rules relating to the objective measurement of odors at the boundary of the licensee's properties. The thing is, folks, there's no tool to measure objectively the odor. And if there were, then these states would be implementing it. They've gone through the same questions that we've gone through, and these arguments have presented over and over and over again. None of this is new. We are the 17th state for recreational marijuana. If you think that the smell of marijuana has not bothered some folks in rural areas and other states before, you are sadly mistaken. Many of the arguments they brought forward were similar to this. And what most of the states told them was, it's a local government issue. Because it is. And again, that's why we're here in local government, is because you guys are very familiar with what is local and what is not. So we ask you for that purpose to give this a do not pass. And we'd like to continue working on this issue with stakeholders. And by God, I wish folks' neighbors were good. I can't force people to be good neighbors. And I don't think we as a state can either. Thank you very much. Please oppose this.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jay Bostrom. That's Bostrom. I stand in opposition to this bill for a number of reasons, but I mostly came to talk about being a neighbor and also to kind of take exception a little bit to the characterization of being bad neighbors presented by some of the proponents because, or not being a legitimate business person or not being, talking about other legitimate businesses that are suffering because of implied not awesome or legitimate businesses. We are a legitimate business. I come out of education. I was a professor. I was a teacher for many years. It's what I did, and I came in to become a businessman and be a good neighbor. When I moved into the area that I live in currently, where we do have an outdoor growing capacity, we're one of six licenses in the state that was grandfathered in, clearly that odor cannot be contained as is stipulated for in this this bill. But we also do have some indoor facilities in other parts of the state, so it's not symmetrical. And that's a problem, as Kate has pointed out. How do you apply that evenly to all of these businesses and make that a fair practice? But most importantly, I kind of want to talk about odor itself. My outdoor grow in the summer, to me, is an appealing thing, and I'm not a cannabis user. That'll probably strike a lot of you as odd. Probably most of my cohort in this industry, the cannabis space, in fact, it's something that they are very happy to partake in, but I don't for my own personal reasons. But as a business person, I appreciate the opportunity to do something on my farm to make it profitable. My wife and I explored bamboo and lavender, many other things that didn't really pan out in the number sense, so we went with cannabis. So here we are as a neighbor. I moved into a neighborhood in, 7-8 years ago, trying to become a neighbor, and I have my first ever farm with my wife. I hope I'm a good neighbor. I did put fences up because I had large Anatolian Shepherd livestock guardian dogs. I figured I didn't want my dogs to get out to you know, hurt other people's livestock or to do something bad. But as far as the odor, that's not something we can regulate. That's not something we can try to contain. It's not going to happen. And my neighbors and myself, we raise pigs. And those pigs, as Pepper Peterson just pointed out, are odoriferous, to say the least. And we're proud of our pigs. We like eating the pork. We like sharing it with our neighbors, but we cannot control the smell. So to regulate one smell over another, where it's coffee, I mean, some of the coffee roasters around here, I mean, some people love that smell, but when it's roasting itself, it can have a pretty strong smell for your neighborhood. I don't like going at Costco and smelling tires, right? I can't stand the smell of tires. I literally think that's repulsive. You could go through the compost unit there in Missoula. There's lots of odors, but they aren't being regulated for. People might find breweries and what's the byproduct of breweries to be offensive. But to single out one, and again, that's, you know, with some sort of lament for the neighbors' complaints that we've heard here today, I understand that, but we moved into an area, and I suppose we could go through history and say lots of us have moved into areas at one point, hoping that we would be by ourselves, and neighbors come and neighbors go. We don't regulate fireworks, and fireworks are very, very troubling to my livestock, very troubling to my animals. So if we're going to start trying to regulate how neighbors behave in their, you know, rural settings, what they're going to use for that land for, I think we have to be really cautious about how to proceed. But odor seems to be one that just seems almost absurd to try to regulate. So I urge you to oppose this. Let things be handled in a neighborly fashion with my neighbors. We've had complaint from one neighbor, and we've had to try to resolve those differences as neighbors would. And we've actually been through the county, and we've talked about how we're going to move forward as neighbors. I don't think it's the state's position to try to come in and try to figure out how each neighborhood, each locality is going to handle this issue. So with that, I urge you to oppose House Bill 304. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent. Are we out of time? Yeah. We apparently are out of 10 minutes. We will now go to, if you are here to, as an opponent in the room, come up, say your name, say you're opposed to this bill, and then go ahead and sit down because we've run out of time. I didn't realize the minutes were gone, so go ahead.
Sure. My name is Erica Ciate. Last name is S-I-A-T-E. I represent Hemp Plus and Stink Blossom. My short comment was that both hemp and marijuana are cannabis, and you can't distinguish. So we oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other opponents? Seeing none, we will go online. Again, you are online. I will give a 10-minute allotment for all opponents. If you are speaking, take into consideration there are other people behind you. So if you have something new to say, say it. If you don't have anything new to say, just simply say, I oppose this bill, tell me who you are, move on. That being said, Ms. Kelly, I will give you the ability to let people on and do the timer. So when you are ready, Ms. Kelly, go ahead and let the first person on and let the timer start.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Online attendees, will you please be ready by raising your hand and being ready to unmute when you are called upon?
Go ahead, Arnold.
Hello, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name's Adam Arnold. I represent Collective Elevation, and I oppose HB 304. This bill unnecessarily hinders an entire industry, an attempt at statewide regulation to solve an issue that only exists in a few select areas. Issues like this should be left up to a local governments to solve as complaints arise. This is how it's done in every other state, and this is how it's done on other industries within our state. If we start regulating smells associated with cannabis, then these regulations should also apply to any other industries that create smells, such as manufacturing, agriculture, wastewater treatment facilities, and even restaurants. We don't make barbecue restaurants filter there because vegetarians don't like the smell. If we don't apply these same standards to all business types, we are unfairly discriminating against the cannabis industry, which is already burdened with some of the strictest regulations of any industry. When I built my facility 6 years ago, which is on 37 acres and is zoned appropriately outside of any city, in order to build, I needed to obtain a commercial use permit, which gave the public and neighbors an opportunity to voice their concerns at that time. If new facilities are built, they will also have to go through the same process with the local government, which is designed to give impacted parties a say at the local level before projects are approved. This bill creates unfair standards and rules for different styles of growing within the industry as well. Outdoor grows are exempt from these regulations for obvious reasons, and rightly so. And yet my state-of-the-art greenhouse facility immediately adjacent to my outdoor plants would be currently subjected to smell mitigation rules. Due to the large volume of air in a greenhouse facility, it has to move through to keep it cool, and the open-air nature of these facilities, the smell cannot effectively be controlled in types of facilities of this nature. There's high-volume exhaust fans, roof vents, open-air screened walls, and it makes smell mitigation almost impossible and extremely costly to even attempt with this type of facility, which is also the most sustainable way to grow this crop. I'm talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars for minimal effectiveness on my facility. However, this won't solve the smell in my situation, as my outdoor plants are right outside these same greenhouses. Furthermore, there's 100 acres of hemp just down the road, which smells the same as the cannabis I'm growing. Also, my nearest neighbors, who are wonderful and I get along with well, are a horse boarding stable who own a business that also generates a strong smell. We all get along just fine with no issues at all. Forcing me to attempt to mitigate smell in my facility would be extremely expensive, disproportionately so compared to indoor facilities, have minimal effectiveness, and if it did, the fresh air would be obscured by my outdoor plants, the neighbor's horse manure, and hemp farm down the road. Please oppose HB 304 as it is an overly cumbersome solution that will negatively impact an entire industry, have minimal success in some types of facilities, and cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to address in a handful of issues in a few select spots. This issue could currently be solved at the local level with the existing system that is in place. And if you need any information pertaining to the amount of cubic foot of airflow and what that would actually look like, one of the proponents mentioned $14,000, but it would be exponentially more than that. Please oppose this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next opponent, Gosney.
Hello, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
My name is Josh Gosney. I represent Infinity Wellness. I feel some empathy for these residents, and I oppose this bill, but I do think the state should do some studies on, terpenoids. I'm a chemical engineer. I was working on my PhD in atmospheric science, particularly on cloud nucleation, particulate matter. So I have some experience in this area. And I would say that, a mile is a bit long. I think when the wind blows, it could be 20 miles. I think when the wind doesn't blow, it could be less than a quarter mile. I think the counties should be able to deal with this. And I think the state should do some studies on, residential distance and maybe even make this a complaint-driven thing. I don't think this is a simple matter that can be blanketed with, a simple solution. I think a small carbon filter might be appropriate. I think an ozone generator could also be an alternative appropriate. I think there should be maybe a list of appropriate measures for indoor grows. I don't know how you can do a greenhouse. I don't think that'll be very easy. I think that there's a lot of the other opponents had some very good points about, outdoor facilities and, other different types of manufacturing facilities which cause smell. I think this is a really complicated issue, but, a simple for an indoor facility, I think, there are some pretty simple solutions that don't have to cost too much money. That being said, I think it's going to be some prohibitively expensive for some facilities to really implement this. And as far as I know, scientifically, there's no way to really quantify smell. I don't think it's really possible to quantify it. I think it's a very subjective matter. Thank you. I oppose this bill.
Thank you. Next opponent, Jonah. Jonah? No last name. Is this Barney? Go ahead and unmute yourself, Ms. Barney, or Ms. Barney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joanna Barney, B-A-R-N-E-Y for the record, representing Sacred Sun Farm, standing before you in opposition of House Bill 304. These Montanans have built their forever business, a legitimate business that employs Montanans and professionals. These businesses contribute to the strong economy of our state by way of sacrifice of being marijuana business owners. Boy, do they get picked on. They can't get a loan from a bank and can hardly hire a subcontractor because of the nature of their business. They are good neighbors and they are approachable. A sister crop, hemp, is a robust industry in Montana. Acreages of hemp are grown outdoors. Hemp is cannabis. It's not any different. THC does not emit a smell. We don't even require emissions testing for vehicles in Montana. Mature markets exist, and let us truly look to them for guidance. This bill does not do that. House Bill 304 is impossible to enforce.
It does not do anything to make it complaint driven like mature markets have done. And we need to make this a local issue, as others have said before. I urge you to give this a do not pass.
Thank you. Next opponent, Ms. Kelly. Go ahead.
Hello, my name is Sahil Met.
Oh, we lost him. Oh, no. If we can get him back online, let's go ahead and go put somebody else up there, Ms. Henneman, or Ms. Kelly. Go ahead, Bond.
Good evening, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Mariah Bond, B-O-N-D, and I am here representing Soltonics and Euphoria Wellness. We would just like to echo the sentiments that all the others who have opposed this bill have said, and we hope that you oppose this bill solely because there's more work that needs to be done. We understand that it's an issue, but we feel that this isn't the proper fix. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and, Ms. Kelly, go ahead and put Mr. Mehta back on. Looks like he got back on. Or not. There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
All right. My name is Sahil Mehta, last name M-E-H-T-A. I would also echo all of our fellow our opponents. And one of the things that I would add is most of these people that are staying in these areas are in areas where there are no HOA and no covenants. So they want to be in a place where there's no restrictions on them, but they would like to impose restrictions on others, which doesn't make any sense. And we also do pay a very heavy tax burden, which is helping the state in many ways. So thank you, and I oppose.
Thank you. Ms. Kelly, next opponent. Glenn, go ahead and unmute your mic. There you go. We can hear you.
Yeah, my name is Glenn Broughton. That's B-R-O-U-G-H-T-O-N. And I own Starbuds based out of Missoula. And I would like to state that I'm in opposition of this bill for many reasons, but the simple fact that it is discriminatory is the biggest. You've got the city of Missoula, which owns the city sanitation sewer treatment plant and Eco Compost, which are 700 yards right off of North Reserve Street, which house the largest conflux of or entity of restaurants in the entire area. I've got a buddy of mine who owns a restaurant on North Reserve Street with an outside eatery, which he can only use about two times a week during the summer. And that's only when the wind blows the right direction. Other than that, he can't, people won't eat out there because of the stench of sewer that comes from the city owned businesses. So for us to be singled out that we're going to be subject to all these rules where the city can pump raw sewage into your restaurant with no consequence, and yet we're being singled out and treated like the redheaded stepchild just because we're cannabis. If you don't like the smell of cannabis, that's all right. I don't like the smell of sewer. There's lots of smells. Everything smells. But to single out one individual smell is absolutely absurd. And like I said, discriminatory, and that's why this bill should be shoved under the deepest, darkest rug there is. That's it.
Thank you. Next opponent.
I apologize, Mr. Chair. I have an opponent that I do not know where they exactly belong.
I don't see, I don't know, are you talking with MTC, whatever?
Yes, I am.
Let's let them on, and if they could, that's a tough one. I don't know if I can, when you guys sign on online, make sure you're putting your name on here so that we can see it on this list, because I see this name on here, and it could be anybody, and I'm very resistant on letting it online because it's a very interesting not name.
It sounds like somebody's using Zoom channels.
Mr. Chair, do I have permission to let them unmute?
Is there a way to get their name? Go ahead and let them say their name.
Matt Liney.
Okay. In the future reference, please use your name. That way we know who you are on our paperwork.
Yes, I apologize. I will, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. We've run out of time. So if you want to go ahead and state your name, who you're with, and whether you're opposition of this.
Certainly. Hello, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Antoinette Leininger. I represent Sacred Sun Farms, and I rise in opposition to House Bill 304. And I ask you to do the same. I will submit my testimony via email. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other opponents online, Ms. Kelly?
No, Mr. Chair. I have no other hands raised.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Sorry, public. It was a weird name, and I'd rather be called something besides having interesting things pop up on my screen. That being said, we've heard of proponents and opponents. Are there any informational witnesses in the room? Informational witnesses only come up, say their name, who they're with, and then so there's no time for them.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kristen Barber. Last name is spelled B-A-R-B-O-U-R. I'm the administrator of the Cannabis Control Division with the Montana Department of Revenue. With me today is also Courtney Cosgrove. She is the attorney for the program, and Aaron Ducharme, who is the deputy administrator and oversees the inspection team. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other informational witnesses?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Eric Copeland, C-O-P-E-L-A-N-D. I'm the Bureau Chief for Building Commercial Measurements. We are responsible for adopting building codes and commercial mechanical codes that are implemented statewide. Thank you.
Any other informational witnesses in the room or the hallway? Seeing none, Ms. Kelly, do I have any online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. You've been a champion and you've been awesome. Appreciate your patience with me on that line. That being said, we will go to committee questions. Senator Zolikoff.
Mr. Copeland.
Mr. Chair, Senator Zolikoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Copeland. Quick question, maybe you can go in detail actually about the, I know you have some experience in the construction side. I don't know more about the those sensors or those ability to detect the different smells and if there are standards that are used across the state, and if some devices work, don't work, aren't meant to be used like that. Can you kind of touch on some of that? Because we heard that in the testimony.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, Senator Zolnikoff. I believe there was some testimony that it is a difficult thing to measure smell. From our aspect, I would agree that is something that's difficult to measure. More so, there are a lot of options for filtration, or the term filtration is not necessarily a mechanical system. There is also carbon filtration and things like that could be added to existing exhaust systems for covering that. But as far as being able to monitor a specific smell, I think that's as people have testified, that's very difficult.
A follow-up.
Go ahead.
And do we monitor any other smells? And I'm just going to add this as an and, Mr. Chairman. And are there already requirements for these filtration devices or such devices in these establishments?
Mr. Chair, Senator Zolnikoff, we do not measure smells in other areas around the state. Typically, from a building code standpoint, we get involved when there is an installation of a system. There isn't necessarily any requirements built into when you would be required those based on smell or emissions that could cross over state or property lines.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Just to clarify, in marijuana grow facilities, are there requirements for filtration, and already, is this already a requirement? And if you need me to refer, you can do that too.
Mr. Chair, Senator Zolnikoff, from the building code standpoint, it depends on the type of facility, how large the facility is, how much air is moving through there. There could potentially be some need for mechanical filtration based on that, but it would be on a case-by-case basis, and I would defer to the Department of Revenue as far as any requirements that they would have built into their licensing program.
If you'd like to defer, go ahead.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, could I defer that to?
Go ahead.
Barbara. Mr. Chair,
Chairman, Senator Zolnikoff, we do not currently have any air filtration systems as a requirement for licensing. We follow what building and fire code tell us in the local governments, and that's what we hold our licensees to. And so it might be different in Missoula than it is in Bozeman, than it is in Livingston. Thank you.
Senator Boldman.
I guess Ms. Barber, since you're there. Hi. Mr. Chair, Ms. Barber. So I'm trying to sort of get to where this bill changed in the House versus the fiscal note we have. So if you can just go to page one. The bill as we see it now under 1612.210 inspections, it looks like line 24, the department shall inspect annually each premises. But the fiscal note says that the bill, I think, says that you would do two a year. Yeah, House Bill 304 as amended allows the department to conduct more than two unannounced inspections a year. Am I missing something that it would be one versus two? There's a reason I'm going to ask, because I'm on finance and claims too, and this is going to be an issue.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bowman, good catch. So we are by statute required to do at least an annual inspection, and we do that at renewal. We do try to do more than one inspection a year. Many of those are complaint-based. We do try to do a mid-year inspection, which is, 5 to 6 months after the annual renewal. We have 12 inspectors across the state, and I would tell you their workload is pretty large. So honestly speaking, we haven't been able to meet that second inspection on all of those facilities.
Sure.
Because we're responding to complaints.
So, Mr. Chair, I think just from a...
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Barber. So if there was just some unifying clarity here where it says that the department shall conduct an unannounced inspection and then that you shall do an annual inspection. If we could just clarify that maybe you just have to do one unannounced one a year, right? Would that then change this fiscal note a little bit if it was just clear that it had to be one unannounced? And there is a reason I'm asking, because at the unannounced inspection, wouldn't that be the time that you could hypothetically do the sensory analytical methodology or whatever you're going to do to measure smell?
Chairman, Senator Boldman, I would say based on the current fiscal note in front of you, we were under the impression, and after talking with the sponsor, that it would be complaint-based. So we do not have the ability with our current workload and staff to respond to smell issues or odor issues. And so we were asking for two FTE. Our state is large, and we thought we would, separate the regions and try to get someone who would be able to drive out and go out and inspect and do a reading and try to determine. And I would say, as you all know, based on crops, I mean, the smell is going to change based on where the crop is at in its flowering stage. And so our concern is, and I'm just going to be very honest, is if we go out at the annual inspection, it will not be very likely we're going to find an issue.
Can I ask one quick follow-up then, Mr. Chair?
$20. I'm joking. Go ahead.
Basketball.
No, you're fine. I'm giving you a hard time. Go ahead.
That's a really good point. So, Mr. Chair, Ms. Barber, so if we just clarified that the department shall conduct an unannounced inspection at least once a year, and if it was complaint-driven, that's when you would measure the smell?
Mr.
Because otherwise you don't have to measure the smell, because they hypothetically might be required to have a filtration system.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bowman, yes, I believe that could happen at the unannounced. I believe through some of my discussions with the sponsor, we were thinking would be at our annual inspection, which is the only inspection we can currently count on doing every year. So I would say if we're asking for an unannounced, when we do an annual inspection, it is announced because it's through the renewal process. So that would be requiring a second inspection. And with the FTE we have, we can't commit to that.
Senator Mandeville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hinkle, why is this focused on just marijuana? Why not do a broader bill that would address odor from either more industries, refineries, sugar beet factories, bakeries? Why not have a broader bill to address this as it applies to other industries as well?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. That's a great question that came up in the House committee. As far as part of that question, with your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I forgot to hand out all this signature petitions in favor of this bill. If I could do that at this time and then explain why.
Is that a copy for everybody?
It would be for the record, but they could look through it. But it's about 80 names right now.
You want to pass it to the Senator Vermeer and he can pass it around. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. It's a great question. I don't even know where to start with it. First off, with these signatures, these are people who could not show up for the committee hearing, and we had a lot more proponents in the House committee hearing. But the fact of the matter is marijuana is so new in the state, and this is a new industry that is all of a sudden coming in and moving into these neighborhoods. So for instance, I live right next to, well, probably within about a half mile from the city sewer lagoons in Belgrade. And a certain time of year, the water turns over as the temperature increases, generally around May or June, and it gets very bad. And when the wind blows your direction, you cannot have your windows open. You have to shut them right away or your entire house will smell like methane. But the fact of the matter is that I made a choice to move into that neighborhood. And I made a choice to live there and to deal with that. What we're dealing with right now is, because marijuana is so new in the state, is all these people who have set up their businesses and set up their residences and their dream homes are now all of a sudden having a marijuana facility moving in right next door to them and are destroying their quality of living and driving customers away. And I believe the opponents downplayed what other states are doing as far as passing these ordinances. Just a simple Google search would bring up ordinances in Oregon, Washington, Colorado, just to name a few. This bill was actually patterned after, it was actually, the initial language in the bill was actually picked from a grower in Washington who is a relative of one of the representatives here in the legislature, and said, yeah, this is a thing, like this is heavily regulated. And so these other states are doing it, and I believe that the reason why they probably cannot, and this is my own opinion, do a state, maybe a statewide law, is because they've been in this industry for so long and they have a patchwork of local government ordinances. And my thought is, because marijuana is so new, we should have addressed this last session. Let's get some standards in there now, and then if local governments need to build on those standards based on that, then they would. But that is why marijuana, if you look up, New York just had an article that come out just recently about how the smell has gotten so bad in New York now, you can't go anywhere without smelling marijuana. And marijuana seems to be the big issue. Hog farms, things like that, they're established. They're there a long time. The city's not going to allow a hog farm to move right into a residential area. So I think it really comes down to first come, first serve. And right now, this industry is so new, and they're encroaching on territory with these smells. They're hurting businesses and residences.
Thank you. Follow up.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hinkle, so is there a grandfather clause that says if there's a home moves next to a marijuana cultivating facility that no longer has to test?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator, another great question. That is actually in the works in the amendment that we've been working on with the department. That was one of the requests, and it would have a grandfather clause in there. So for any business that's within a mile, that, you know, at the time, basically it's based on the effective date of the act. If they're prior to the effective date of the act, they are grandfathered in. So if another business or residence moves in, they will not ever be required to place a filtration system in their facility.
Okay, thank you.
Can I ask one more question? Sorry.
Senator Pope, I'll get you through the rotation again, Mrs. Senator Bowman.
I think. No. Mr. Chair, for Mr. Copeland. Get you off the spot there, Mr. Sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pope.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Copeland, we've had conversations in this committee about fire safety and other types of building regulation where the local government, Mr. Chair, and I'm asking, you can clarify whether I'm online here, the local government has the power to create regulations that would be stronger than a state regulation if we were to pass a bill like this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pope.
Follow my drift.
I think so. So local government would be one thing, and the regulations that they could do. As far as the building code is concerned, local jurisdictions are required to adopt the same codes that we do. Mm-hmm. So if there's a requirement by state law that a filtration system be installed, and it is a system that would be a mechanical type system, would need to be installed, permitted, and inspected to meet the same standards that the state has adopted, no matter what that local jurisdiction would be. If a local jurisdiction wants to adopt something more stringent than what the state already has in place, they can do that through a voluntary incentive-based program.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up.
Go ahead.
As you understand the bill, or I can redirect this, would the statute that's being used for regulating this fall under your purview, or is that somewhere else in the, I mean, who is sort of holding on, if we pass this bill, holding on to the oversight on the inspection part?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pope, I'm trying not to speak out of turn. I would assume that the regulation of that would fall to the Department of Revenue, okay, as that is part of the cannabis control program.
Okay.
However, once a system is required, then it needs to be permitted through Department of Labor and Industry that way.
And just to clarify, Mr.
Go ahead.
Mr. Copeland, I think I'm getting this, but if it goes through DOR, comes to you, and you say it has to have 1,000 cubic feet per hour, whatever, does that mean that, Mr. Chair, where I'm trying to get to is whether local governments folks have been saying there's a role for local governments to oversee this. You know, does this bill take us down a path where local governments, Mr. Chair, cannot, because of the frameworks that we've been talking about for fire safety and other things, Mr. Chair? So if a local government wanted, you know, to, you know, really dig into this issue where the state would just set up sort of a baseline, but a local government really had a problem, in your opinion, Mr. Copeland, would a local government have trouble through the process we just talked about of then also trying to have an ordinance, you know, to deal with this? I'm just trying to clarify who's going to do the work here. Yeah.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Senator Pope, I think it would be a consolidated effort. Obviously, if there are standards put in that are directed to provide so much airflow or so much filtration per hour, per minute, anything like that, those become part of the building codes. And obviously, local jurisdictions that are certified for building programs can meet the same minimum standards that we adopt statewide. And again, they have the ability to require at a larger level of filtration. However, it has to be a voluntary incentive-based program that the providers, the marijuana providers, would have the option whether they want to participate at that point or not.
They couldn't mandate it.
That is correct.
Yeah. We have Mr. Blues Brothers as our chair. I was having a hard time. Yeah. But thank you, Mr. Copeland. That was all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Dunwell, and I could have my eye patch on if you'd prefer that.
I like the eye patch.
Aye.
You look great. All right, we're going to move on. Senator Dunwell.
Mr. Chair, question for information witness, Ms. Barber, please, of the Department of Revenue.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunwell.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Barber, good to see you again. Ms. Barber, as I recall, Mr. Chair, working at the Department of Revenue, there was a mission statement protecting taxpayers with respect to fairness. There was a taxpayer's bill of rights, and a cannabis facility, manufacturing facility, is a taxpayer and is included in that bill of rights. So how many other manufacturing facilities collect taxes on, such as breweries, refineries, other emission sources. How many other ones do you also go out and regulate the odors for?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunwell, I will tentatively answer this only because I know my spot and how I've sat in the department. I am not familiar with any aspect of the Department of Revenue that manages odor for taxpayers.
Okay, follow-up, please.
Go ahead.
And Ms. Barber, I think I heard the sponsor say that there's some disagreement on the FTE that you would require. You're asking for two in order to come up to speed. Maybe they have to be environmental scientists, which would be a new thing for the Department of Revenue, your tax specialists. So could you explain all the new things that you would have to do to be able to do this scientific testing and regulation, please? And are two enough?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunwell, thank you for the question. So I have a picture of what the tool is called, and it's called the Nasal Ranger. It looks like this. It's a tool that they've used for other, it's just a kind of a general smell indicator. And so our inspectors would go out, they would have to calibrate this tool, they would have to make sure that the tool is able to pick up whatever the odor specificities are that come out of the bill. And I think that that will take some fine tuning. I would say that, and I've shared this concern with the sponsors, we are not familiar with this tool, and so we don't know how successful it will be in being able to manage and really help us read consistently what these odors are. So I think that's the first part, is just getting the right tools, which we have averaged is going to be about $85,000 just to get these here in Montana. And then we have to be trained on them. So that's kind of the technical aspect of it. And then we have 12 inspectors who go out to over 1,000 locations. And so we're pretty darn busy. And so if we just build this portion of the inspection in at the annual inspection, I don't think we need another FTE. If we deviate from that plan and we need to go out and we need to do a second or an unannounced inspection or a complaint-based inspection, we cannot pick up that workload right now. And so that is where we have said we'd need an FTE. We also, you know, have a portion of the department that deals with disputes. So anytime we would come back to a licensee and say, hey, you have a smell that's off the charts and we're going to provide a proposed department action, which is a type of, you know, litigation notice, then that licensee has the ability to go before our Office of Dispute Resolution and challenge that. And that takes legal resources. And I would tell you right now, we have about 57 cases that are pending and we have one attorney. So we're running a pretty lean shop right now. And so telling you that I need one or two FTE, I think is pretty reasonable.
Yeah. Thank you. And one more follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
So how confident are you, Ms. Barber, given that you and your colleagues at the Department of Revenue are not scientists, how confident are you that this nasal detector wouldn't pick up other smells and skew the whole issue and results?
Chairman, Senator Dunwell, I think that's a great question. From what we're reading about these tools, that is exactly what there are issues that they encounter, is they're meant to measure odor, but it doesn't have, it's not just cannabis. It could be pig farms. It could be paint shops. We have to figure out how to calibrate it correctly. And I think that's what we're seeing, is we haven't had the opportunity to work with this tool. And so I would tell you that I can't confidently stand before this body and say, yep, we've got this figured out. The tool could completely fail.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, may I have a question for the sponsor, please?
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Hinkle, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, yeah. Senator.
Thank you for collecting your documentation and the signatures, the petitions. To me, I served in Helena Citizens Council. We collected petitions. They were local issues. Did you take this to governance in the Four Corners area, to county commissions?
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, that was actually the proponents that came in, one of the proponents that came in to testify when we were in the House committee, and they gave that to me during the committee to offer up to the committee members. So because of that, they weren't able to be here, and I think they literally gave me their handwritten signatures. At that point, it becomes a public record. So what I did before this hearing is I asked the staff to get me copies of those so that I could provide those for the committee here. So I did not take those signatures. Those were literally neighbors and talking with neighbors and talking with neighbors and talking with neighbors. And when this bill came forward, it literally spread like wildfire. And
so follow up.
So follow up.
My question is, when you went to your local governments, because I'm assuming you went to, it's a local issue, I'm assuming you went to the county, did all of the neighbors go, and what did the county commission say?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I cannot speak to that myself. One of the legislators who was going to testify in the bill but is stuck in appropriations now and couldn't, she has. And the local governments answered, and guess this is information from her to me, is that they wouldn't do anything about it. They wouldn't address it. So my understanding is that efforts have been made with the local government, but I can't speak to the details of that personally.
Just one more follow-up.
Follow-up, and luckily we're in a committee hearing, so hearsay is allowed here.
Okay, so hearsay. So other legislator who you spoke with, who you say did local governance organization entity, what did she say was the reason the local government wouldn't do anything about it?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I can't exactly comment on that. It was actually, last summer that it happened. And she had contacted me afterwards and told me about this issue. And I had not, in my intro, I said I had not thought anything about it until later on in that summer. I happened to be in the area and smelled it for myself. Honestly, I didn't even know I was going to be carrying this bill this session. I put in the bill draft because I felt like it was an issue that really needed to be addressed, and ended up just deciding to carry it myself. Thank you.
Senator Dunwell, do you want to propose a subpoena to bring in the county commissioners and that legislator?
Do that now.
I'd love to use it when the actual chair is gone. Senator Boldman.
Yeah, thanks a lot. So, Mr. Chair, my question is for the good Representative Hinkle as well. Mr. Chair, Representative Hinkle, I think what you're trying to do is admirable. We had a cigar bar in downtown Missoula who came in underneath our children's museum. And so I was quite familiar with my own constituents as well, complaining about odors. I mean, that is a powerful thing, and I'm also well aware that there are objective, like I said, analytical methodology to measure smell. But with that, I also was very persuaded, and certainly when some of your proponents talked about their forever home and how this is very difficult, I thought that was very persuasive. I also am very persuaded by what Ms. Barber was talking about, and perhaps you can hear from the questions from some of the folks on the committee about this idea of fairness, right, and the other business owners who maybe aren't making a smell. So I guess my question to you is that now how the bill has been amended, would you feel comfortable, because again, I feel like what you're trying to do is admirable and real, cigar smoke and marijuana is not like all other things. That's why it's highly regulated, right? So so now that we know that the department has to do at least one unannounced inspection a year, and that the smell factor is going to be complaint-based, they don't have to smell factor everyone. Mm-hmm. So instead of them having to buy the nose meter and do all of this other stuff, since we know that there's already in the private sector professionals that have this ability, couldn't we just slightly amend the bill that if on the at the complaint based moment, if the inspector truly from just a smell test feels like that the complaint is partially legitimate or that there could be a reason that it was, you know, legit, that's actually what we call upon them to do all the time, is have to make sort of objective analysis on whether the complaints are real or not. Could at that point we amend the bill so that the license holder themselves would then have to pay for, maybe we'll have a list of people that are qualified to do the smell test, and the licensee then has to pay for that objective analysis instead of making all of the license holders in the whole state have a filtration system when maybe they weren't even the bad actors. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. I mean, great question. Let me start. That's a long question, but let me start.
There's a lot going on there, but I think
Yeah, absolutely. And these are the same questions that came up in committee on the House side. So the committee, it was actually discovered during the hearing through some research about this smell standard, and that it was in Denver and then the nasal ranger and all of that. And that's actually just where the committee grabbed a hold of, because if you look in the bill, if you see the the language that was struck, let's see here. Okay, so look at actually, so I have an online copy, so the sections might be different, but it's page 4, but it would be section 2, and it would be subsection 3. And if you read that as it currently stands right now, it says all indoor licensed premises on which marijuana products are manufactured must, well, then you see the struck language there. The initial language in the bill said must be ventilated so that the odor of marijuana cannot be detected by a person with a normal sense of smell at the exterior of their licensee location or at any adjoining use property. So that's where we started out with the bill. And that was actually literally language from, I believe, 3 different ordinances on marijuana that were on the books, and it was the language selected by an individual who was a grower in another state, because we had to find a starting place for this bill. And I told the committee up front, I said, this is a starting place, and I need your help to sharpen this bill up and make it appropriate and doable. So, but then it became up, well, whose sense of smell, and you know, how do you measure that? How does that hold up in court? Which were very valid arguments. So the committee changed the bill to some kind of objective measurement. And that was the measurement that they decided to put into the bill. So as we go forward, in the meantime, now this is new, so Ms. Barber at the Department of Revenue is now having to look into this thing, okay, and gain more research on how this is used and should it be used for regulatory purposes. And in the meantime, it has come to my attention through my conversations with the Department of Revenue that the costs are coming in higher than what they originally quoted. It's not supposed to be used for regulatory purposes. And it does, this was a new thing, it takes in all odors. So it's not just marijuana. So I would be absolutely in favor of striking that out and just allowing for air filtration. Now, coming back to your other part of the question, I just lost my thought on that.
You still feel compelled to require all business owners,
yes, okay, great,
even if they've never had a complaint and there is no objective smell factor, you still want them to have an air filtration system? I mean, they could just be a little mom and pop that just makes one little kind of things like gummy bears or something, right? Like, so you want them all to have an air filtration system if there's possibly no reason to?
Mr. Chair, Senator, great question. That's where I lost my train of thought that I was going to answer. For one, these facilities are not little mom and pops. They're big, either cultivation or they're manufacturers, so they manufacture the product. They're not the dispensaries. The dispensaries are not in here. So we batted around because, for one, the opponents wanted the facilities that are out in the boondocks that don't affect anyone, they wanted them out of the bill, which we put that in there, that 1 mile, zone. And then the other thing is that they were talking about, well, can we make this complaint-driven? I would be open to that, but my concern is that if you have a facility that's running and operating for a period of time, and then all of a sudden somebody levels a complaint, then what do you got to do? You got to all of a sudden put an air filtration system in. So I thought the most fair way of doing this is to just allow, the state law says you have to have it, get it, You have it in there. It doesn't matter if anyone complains about you. Instead of the nasal ranger, the department, as they do their inspections, can just inspect to make sure that the filtration system is working properly. The vast majority of them are using carbon filtration systems. And then everything's good, and we don't have to worry about who's going to complain in the future. And I just thought that was the most fair way to do it.
Okay, cool. Mr. Chair.
Senator Treves.
Thank you. For Mr. Copeland, I came up with a question.
Mr. Copeland.
Since my colleague
and
who knows about
thanks for calling. I can't see you guys, so.
It's okay. Mr. Chair, Mr. Copeland, I guess one question that I maybe think you touched on a little bit with the conditional use permit thing, but how are these facilities and grow operations ending up in residential areas?
Mr. Chair, Senator Treves, if they're not in an area that's particularly zoned that way, there is no zoning there that prohibits them from being installed or used pretty much anywhere.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Copeland, let's say a county, could they start zoning or potentially retroactively zone to some degree that might cause some legal issues? But what do you think?
Mr. Chair, Senator Treves, I think that zoning districts are created regularly. I am not a zoning person, so there may not be, or there may be some regulations over grandfathered in buildings and properties that I'm not sure about, but absolutely a local jurisdiction, a county could create a zoning area or zoning district at any time.
Okay. I don't know if there's anybody else in the room who may be a little bit more intimately involved with zoning. Just kind of wanted to dig into the ask.
So, Senator Treves, I bet Ms. Cosgrove.
Yeah, there you go.
She would probably know about the different zoning laws.
May I ask my seatmate over to this side?
Sure. Senator Vermeer.
I kind of get the drift of my question. Like, could you do retroactive zoning or zoning and control these facilities?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Treves. Anaconda, we actually went through something like this out in the West Valley. We got the residents together. We had three public meetings, and they hands down they said basically they didn't want the county fooling around with what they can and cannot do out there. So hence no zoning. About 8 months later, a guy bought some property and was going to put in a grow operation. And the same voices thought, no, they can't do that. Well, actually, they can now. You didn't want any zoning. So that can happen, too.
Thank you for that.
But I'd just like to, that zoning is a county of the function of local government. So. I think that's where the meat of this really, really lies.
And then I guess, Mr. Chair, just to drill down to the bottom of that, to ask a question, is if you couldn't possibly do retroactive zoning once there's something already there, unless you want some sort of legal challenge, right, that you probably lose.
Was that a follow-up?
Yes, sir. Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chair, Senator Treves. Actually, it got turned down, that project, because the way the road went into the area, fire protection couldn't be handled. The road was by a bridge, and then there was a power pole there, and it was a sharp turn, and the fire department actually knocked that one out of the water.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I'm put the wheels back on the bus. I had one for Mr. Peterson. Just to kind of do the devil's advocate one about people moving in afterwards, how about the people who lived in the area before the facilities came in and did have
sure.
that?
Yeah, those folks. Sure. And again, when you choose to live in a place that has zoning regulations that don't exist, you enjoy those freedoms, and the people around you do as well. And so when you choose to live in an unincorporated area, for whatever reason, then you know, those rules apply to the people that come after you as well. And so, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander in those situations. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that's fair. Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Senator Ramirez Shapu is a proponent, opponent, or informational witness? Don't answer that. Don't answer that. All right. Would the sponsor like to close on his bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of committee, for a really great hearing, a good conversation. I have so many points written down. I do want to reinstate the fact that the Department of Revenue is already doing these inspections, and that's why it's appropriate for them to conduct inspections should we require air filtration. It is a little weird, and I think that was topic of discussion last session when they were implementing the marijuana laws, but the Department of Revenue, I guess, drew the short stick on that, so they are the entity that would be doing these inspections. The fiscal note, again, being in communication with the Department of Revenue, we were under a miscommunication. I thought that the bill was going to have them do the inspections when they were doing the regular inspections. They felt that the language of the bill would encompass all the complaints. And so in the draft amendment that I have been working on, we are clarifying that it's during their regular inspections, and that should knock off 2 FTE off the bill already. And I had planned on maybe talking with appropriations folks to see if we could actually get them an extra FTE anyway, because they are short-staffed. So many of these marijuana facilities are popping up all over the state, and even though they're supposed to be doing, you know, the 2 inspections, they're only getting through the second inspection about half the time. So it would be good to actually get them some more money so they can do their job. Gallatin County is a hot spot. As you noticed by the signatures there, I can't speak for all the proponents online. I know some of them are probably from other counties, but in Gallatin, some of the areas that I know of are unzoned areas, and other areas I believe are zoned commercial because they're actually kind of, they're in between Belgrade and Four Corners. And there's another facility over there that I'm getting calls and complaints about, and it's just one facility. So I want to bring up the local option sales tax. I mean, we talked about, well, can county governments do this?
Can we amend that in?
So, Senator, Gallatin has passed a local option sales tax. I'm not sure if other counties have, but it did come up in committee that I specified last time. When you have citizens going to a county, you need to have a county that's going to listen to them. And to overturn or to rezone an area, I don't see any county doing that. Another bill that we passed, you guys actually passed of mine earlier this year, I was in conversations about that. As far as zoning goes, and can you change zoning in the future? And they said, yeah, you would have to grandfather in all the businesses and industries if you were to rezone from commercial to residential, per se. And if you didn't, then it could be considered a governmental taking. So, but when you pass a local option sales tax and these industries are now providing revenue for the county, you know, That's a consideration that I think the county is gonna take in also. So I did want to bring that up, and I'm not accusing any county, but I'm just saying that money talks, and which was why I was opposed to that portion of the bill last session. So we talked about the nasal ranger, so thank you for that question. Local government has authority. We talk about that, but it came up in last committee, and I think it may have come up in this committee, that the homeowners were never notified. Last committee, the opponents were coming up to the podium and saying, well, you know, we have a review process for this, and they should have been part of that process and voiced their concerns at that time. And then they were asked by the committee, were you ever invited or notified? Did you have any clue that this process even happened? And none of them were like, no, we didn't. So they weren't brought to the table on this. And I'm sure had they known and had that opportunity, they would have given their mind on it, of course. So we talked about, in my county at least, the county was contacted and has not acted at this point. Outdoor growers are not in this bill. And one of the, so if you, from my understanding, also hoop houses are not in the bill. And as far as outdoor grow operations, the information that I have come across recently, and I could be corrected, but I believe there's only 10 or so outdoor growers in the state because they have been grandfathered in. And there will be no more outdoor grow operations. With that, I'm considering in the bill because of greenhouses. Greenhouses can be opened up to the open air. And so there's some conversation right now on maybe some of these outdoor grow operations that have greenhouses, such as Mr. Arnold, that maybe that could be an exception as a outdoor grow operation. And then lastly, I want to talk about there's a gentleman on the House side that shared, I think actually he was one of the proponents this time, but he didn't go into a lot of detail, but he talked about, you know, his doors being open and the house filling with marijuana, and he would have to shut the doors right away, but he couldn't get the marijuana out of the house until the next wind came through, and they would have to reopen the doors of the house to let the wind blow everything out. And I know exactly what he's talking about, because the methane that comes from a sewer lagoon is the same thing. It hangs in there and it just does not leave. And then another gentleman who is not able to testify today is planning on moving because the marijuana had gotten so bad, and he has had multiple buyers. He's had to lower the price on his house multiple times, and he has had multiple buyers, potential buyers, come by and not even offer because they smelled the marijuana smell. So now he's stuck. He can't even get his house sold. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, can you imagine living in a nice home with clean air in which to raise your family, only to have a marijuana facility move in next door and make your neutral-smelling air a thing of the past? Can you imagine the smell being so bad and consistent that it would drive you to sell your home? What about if you decided to sell your home or find out that your home's value has been lowered and every potential buyer you have backs out because of the smell they smelled? Or to be a business spending X amounts of dollars in advertising and trying to create a welcoming atmosphere for your customers, only to have them chased away by the skunk smell that moved in next door. I believe it was an oversight of the legislature last session that we did not address this issue at the time. That would have been the best time to address this issue. But we in the state of Montana had no experience with the explosion of recreational marijuana, and so we just didn't address it. We didn't know it was an issue. I never thought about it. Last session would have been the best, but this session is the next best. If we kick this can down the road now, it would only grow and grow until we are trying to move a 55-gallon drum ahead of us. Let's address this issue now and put this issue behind us. This bill passed out of the House by a high bipartisan number of legislators, and with that, I would also urge this committee to give House Bill 304 a due pass, and I am fully open to working with the committee on any amendments that you think would make the bill more better. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you all for coming in and a great hearing. This closes the hearing on House Bill 304. 374. No. House Bill, well, Fern's here. All right. This opens up the hearing on House Bill 374.
Thank you, guys. All right. Sorry, I've been running back and forth all day. So, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, members of the Senate Local Government Committee. For the record, my name is Donovan Hawk. That's D-O-N-A-V-O-N, last name Hawk, H-A-W-K, representative for House District 76 on the east side of Butte, America. Today, I bring before you House Bill 374, which is a pretty straightforward bill. Every second is important when there's a medical emergency. Let's hope that an ambulance can get there in time when you have loved ones that are having a heart attack or a stroke. Moments lost when emergency vehicles are slowed or stopped by vehicles who will not yield or move can result in more serious injuries or even loss of life. Sadly, Montana's emergency workers face more and more uncooperative or unattentive drivers. Likewise, each year we can see an increase in serious injuries, even death, when emergency or highway workers are injured by drivers who fail to exercise appropriate caution where roadside accidents have already occurred. This bill seeks to increase penalties for reckless endangerment to emergency and highway personnel to a level that will get drivers' attention. So I appreciate you guys listening to this bill. I asked for this to be redirected to this committee since you heard my first bill on bus penalties. This is the same level of penalties as the first bill, so that way I didn't have them split into two different committees. It would have. But this brings the same level of fines as the other bill, and I'll just go over those in case you have forgotten. The first offense is not less than 500 and no more than 1,000 and or community service of 50 hours. Second offense of 1,000 and 2,000 and or community service. And then the third and subsequent offense is 3,000 to 5,000 and no jail time no less than 30 days. I did look at other states and surrounding areas. I'm sure some of the opponents will come and bring those up. And so we actually are a little behind as surrounding states. So Wyoming, right now our fines are, the first offense is between $10 to $100 on the first offense. Second offense is between $25 to $200. And third and subsequent fine is $50 to $500. So Wyoming starts off at $200 fine. North Dakota is way below average. South Dakota is 30 days imprisonment or $500 in fines. So we are kind of falling behind in the surrounding states. I am bringing my road rage into policy. just having a lot more people moving into our states, and especially in Butte and bigger cities, you see folks that are not moving out of the way of emergency workers. I see it consistently. I actually was going to take some photos while I was back on transmittal. It happened three times while I was in there back in Butte for 2 days. So hopefully you guys can take this into consideration. And I leave this with you guys, and I'll stand by for proponents and opponents.
Thank you, Representative Hawk. Are there any proponents?
Good afternoon, Chair and Committee. For the record, my name is Lance Forstar. Forstar is spelled F-O-U-R-S-T-A-R. I'm the director of the Montana American Indian Caucus. I do have a letter from the caucus addressed to the Senate Local Government Committee, dated March 31st, 2023. It states, Dear Chair and Committee, the Montana American Indian Caucus stands in support of House Bill 374, sponsored by Representative Hawk, creating an offense for failure to yield to an emergency vehicle. Montana's law enforcement community includes LEOs, or law enforcement officers, on and off our reservations. The Montana American Indian Caucus supports this legislation that creates an offense to yield to an emergency vehicle. We, the MAIC, ask for a due pass on House Bill 374. I come from the Fort Peck Reservation. I sit on the Wolf Point City Council from one end to the other on Highway 2. We have about 110 miles of road there, and we have only about 17 tribal law enforcement officers, five or six City of Wolf Point, and then we have Roosevelt County that has to cover everything from basically Oswego to the North Dakota state line. And a lot of the times you won't see anybody yield to emergency vehicles. And of course it's especially with our extreme winters, we have some very hazardous driving conditions. And if you see an ambulance or a law enforcement officer coming through, and they just, we want to avoid that by these measures. So we do ask for a due pass. Sincerely, the Montana American Indian Caucus. Signed, Senators and Representatives Fox, Morjo, Small, Weber, Hawk, Running Wolf, Smith, Stuart Paragoy, Weatherwax, and Windboy. Thank you very much for your time. Have a good day.
Thank you very much. Further proponents.
Good afternoon, Chair Zolnikov and members of the committee. My name is Patrick Iwaki, spelled Y-A-W-A-K-I-E, representing the Blackfeet Tribe today in support of House Bill 374. In an effort to make Montana roads safer, we support the increase of fines and penalties to anyone operating a motor vehicle that doesn't properly yield to emergency vehicle. We must all do our best to ensure that our law and emergency personnel have safe roads to carry out emergency services. Please support House Bill 374 with a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much. For the proponents.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Dusenberry. I represent the Montana Tow Truck Association. I recently was back in D.C. at the...
Can you spell your last name?
Oh, D-U-S-E-N-B-E-R-R-Y. Still suffering from my marijuana sit-down. So anyway, Jim Ostrich with the Federal Highway Commission pointed out that every 15 seconds across the United States, there's an accident. It's either a near struck by, a hit, or a wreck. Strengthening our move over laws and including all the players that work on the highways is very important, but yielding to the emergency responders as they're getting to an accident is critical. I've driven both ambulances, fire trucks, and tow trucks to the scene, and I've witnessed people not yielding, and it's important. Timeliness is of the utmost importance. Keep making the people aware that they need to yield to responding vehicles and pay attention to the activities behind them as well as in front of them is very important. Public awareness and education has to go on. 67% of the motoring public, this is a AAA survey, 67% of the motoring public don't recognize slow down move over, and I believe that that's a like percentage for yielding to responders going down the highway. We kill a tower every 6 days in the United States, so this is near and dear to our heart that we start and move forward. We feel that this is one step in the big puzzle of trying to get drivers aware of yielding to responders and slow down move over. Increasing the fines, I believe, will help fill in that bit of the puzzle. So we urge a due pass of House Bill 374. Thank you.
Thank you. For the proponents.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bob Gilbert, G-I-L-B-E-R-T. I'm here on behalf of the Montana Tow Truck Association. I've worked for these fine people since 1995, and I'm here in support of this bill. I negotiated with Representative Hawk over the fines. My concern at first was if you have them too high, you're punishing the family and not the perpetrator, because the original fines were up to $10,000, and that's no family can afford that, absorb that. And he was very gracious. We sat down and worked out numbers that would work through this and that. My clients with the School Bus Contractors Association. So he's got a good bill. He's doing the right thing. We do need a bump in the penalties. We've got to get those people up there. And I think this bill does it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. For the proponents.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dan Smith, S-M-I-T-H. I am the Executive Director for the Montana Police Protective Association. And I'm also a retired police officer. I'd like the committee to recognize that when police officers run code to calls, that we don't do so willy-nilly. It's because somebody's life is in danger. And when we're on a scene at the side of the highway or a street, we are doing so to help somebody that's in a bad way, and we need people to understand that we cannot be looking over our shoulders, and the move over and slow down is very good, and we are in support of this bill.
Thank you. For the proponents.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nanette Gilbertson, G-I-L-B-E-R-T-S-O-N, and I represent the Montana Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. We also stand in support of House Bill 374. I concur with what has been said, and on behalf of all peace officers in the state of Montana, we thank Representative Hawk for bringing this bill forward. Two things to add. My daughter just finished driver's ed. It's terrifying to have a young driver and you're sitting in the passenger seat, but this is an issue that is covered in driver's ed. So there is an educational component about how you are to operate your vehicle when there's an emergency vehicle approaching you, and what you're supposed to do. The penalties, I think, are reasonable. And if we look at the penalties for the third time, that's a habitual offender. That's someone who's not paying attention and just simply doesn't care. And so I think those penalties should have some teeth in them. I would ask for you to do concur on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Is there anybody online? Opponents?
Chair Zolnikoff, members for the committee, my name is Maggie Bornstein, spelled B-O-R-N-S-T-E-A-N. Here on behalf of the ACLU of Montana, I'll make a lot of the same inclusions in this case as I did in regard to the bill brought forward by the good representative from Butte. Oh, there he is. I was looking for him behind me. And that the penalties here reflected are adjacent. And I know the situations are different, but the reality is that we don't think that increasing these type of criminal penalties to folks, especially in the financial regard, is going to really effectuate more public safety in the state of Montana. The reality is the greatest deterrent of crime when somebody is considering something is, am I going to be caught or not? And so the reality is with this is that we're not doing anything to better support the prosecution of these crimes, and we're just levying extreme financial penalties to the individuals who do find themselves in that spot where they have been penalized. As Nanette Gilbertson has raised, there is an inclusion of this type of information in driver's education, but we could look at expanding upon that, some type of issue campaign. The reality is that unless you're new to the road, many of us don't know the existing penalties that exist for this. And I don't want to dismiss at all the regard that it does have for public safety. These are very, very serious situations. But I would disagree with Representative Hawk in that the state of Idaho levies a fine of $90 per offense. And so I don't know that we're really outstanding, especially within our region, that our penalties are significantly lower. And so we're really concerned about the financial burden this will place on individuals. I don't think that we're really going to move into a better, safer spot as a state by doing this alone, and that there are other alternatives we could pursue. Thanks.
Further opponents? Informational witnesses? Questions from the committee? I have one for Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
So, Mr. Smith, I guess my question is just logistics. If you're, say you're still a police officer at this time and you're going and someone's in your way, you don't have time to pull that person over, right? How do logistics work to catch the person who was in the way when you finally get around them to go to the emergency situation? How does that work?
Senator, members of the committee, you're absolutely right. Nine times out of 10, that infraction is never cited because of those. Priority of people's lives take precedent over a traffic ticket. Where I could see that actually happening is with our dash cams and stuff like that, as you're going by, if you see the driver and you pull the plate later from your video camera, then you could go back and cite that person.
All right. So, Mr. Smith, I'm just trying to clarify because it's different than the school bus situation, right? Like, that one's fresh in my mind. That one was a lot harder, nuanced, obviously very important, but this isn't 3 seconds and you forgot there's a school bus. This is someone's ignoring you for 10 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute. So that's why I was trying to figure out the... So, and you can enforce it by actually finding the... using your dash cam to find the plate.
Mr. Chair, yes, and you're right. Generally, it's not just a like a school bus on the side of the road. As you're approaching that person, we're talking lights and siren, and so it takes longer than that for them to really obstruct you. And so,
awesome. Further questions from the committee, Senator Tribus.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I'm not quite sure who to ask this of, but maybe the sponsor.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair, Representative. So I'll start with just a quick little anecdote of something I've seen and then ask you about the enforcement side of this too. But I did see something kind of interesting and amazing one time between Bozeman and Townsend. There was somebody pulled over for a traffic stop, probably for speeding or something. And when someone would go by and not pull over, like, you know, in the next lane when they could have, the officer actually, I think, left the original stop and pulled over each person who did that and said, "You wait here and I'll get back to you." And I think maybe, but so I think definitely we could maybe raise the fines. I'm really concerned about how high we're raising them here. I think Ms. Bornstein had a good point where, you know, if there's a law in the books, people know the law is there, and that deters some people. But obviously, as you've seen, that it's maybe not deterring as many people as possible. So I think maybe on a lot of these issues, too, we have to figure out a better way to encourage enforcement of the current law so that people will actually change their behavior. Maybe one suggestion, and then you can maybe comment on this, is maybe on some calls, you know, the emergency vehicle goes out, they're stopped, and somebody else is watching to enforce the actual law we're trying to put teeth into here. So
I appreciate that question, Chair, Representative, or Senator. This is definitely, I mean, there's issues with, I mean, a lot of our laws that nobody really knows what laws they are breaking and what the penalties are for those, anywhere from, you know, shoplifting a candy bar, or, you know, exactly what those penalties are until it happens. And hopefully, if I decide to run again, that is going to be my next mission, is to try to get some funding to get some education out there, whether it's PSAs or, you know, having our local law enforcement doing some education around it. So, and if you guys, again, this is in your hands now. If you can see me, this is in your hands. And if you guys want to take care of those fines and increase them, they were a lot harsher before it got amended down. Again, I started up here and fortunately whittled our way down. But like I said, again, for those people that don't have financial means, there is that option of community service in there too. So like I said, in transportation on the House side, we had Representative Butcher, who wanted people washing cars. So, I mean, the options are open. So,
Mr. Hawk, we hope you run again. Further questions from the committee? Do you have a carrier in mind?
Oh, yep. So for the first one, actually, I forgot to tell you guys on the last bill, the bus bill, should you guys decide to pass it, Usher was going to carry that one, and Becky Beard for this one.
Mr. Hawk, I'd prefer it be someone who heard the bills.
Okay. It's up to you.
All right.
So,
no further questions. Would the sponsor like to close on his bill?
Yeah, thank you for doing this. I really appreciate you guys taking this bill into your committee. Like I said before, it was kind of some work to get it re-referred. I just wanted both bills heard in the same committee, and we picked a very great day where we're doing all-day floor sessions, so it was nice to run back and forth all day long. So I appreciate you guys taking the time to hear this, and please pass it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for coming in and testifying. This closes the hearing on House Bill 374.
You don't have to go to a trampoline park at 10 in the morning.
No.
This opens the hearing on House Bill 244.
Had duck great eggs.
I can tell you what happened.
No, go home. You have to
How many more are left?
We have no more EAs.
Okay, but...
And this is the last team.
Okay. Oh, and this is Fern's housing deal. This is actually a short one. I read it last night.
Oh, is it?
Peace. Good afternoon, Senate Local Government Committee. I'm Representative Dave Fern, House District 5, Whitefish, North Flathead Valley. I bring before you today House Bill 244, a bill that lifts the restriction on the Montana Board of Housing Montana Fund. At present, 50% of the fund must be used for housing, addressing the needs of people living below the 50% average median income of the state. And while this is a extraordinarily noble and good piece of policy, as you will further understand, it's been very difficult to distribute in finding folks who are eligible for this. So what this bill is proposing is presently there are two effective programs within housing that better meets the need of the under 50% average income: a home down payment assistance grants and a Montana Board of Housing down payment assistance at below market interest rates, along with the board's the Housing Board's efforts to partner with nonprofits. Very few applicants in the under 50% category are eligible for home loan assistance, yet current law stipulates the balance of that subfund, which is about $522,000 or so, must be used to meet that clientele. This bill will allow the balance of the restricted portion of the Housing Montana to go to work immediately funding multifamily housing endeavors throughout the state. This bill, 244, passed through appropriations through the committee and through appropriations with unanimous vote. And I have with me Director of the Housing Division of Department of Commerce to help explain some of the history of this and some of the nuances of that. And with that, I'll make a closing and take questions. Thank you very much, committee members.
Thank you. We will now go into testimony on House Bill 244. Are there any proponents in the room or in the hallway for House Bill 244?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Happy Friday afternoon, evening. For the record, my name is Jake Brown, B-R-O-W-N, here today with Shelter Whitefish, a nonprofit with the mission of advocating for solutions to Montana's housing crisis. We see this as a great bill. It just gives a good program a little bit more flexibility, and we'd urge a due pass. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next proponent. Are there any other proponents for House Bill 244 in the room or in the hallway? Seeing none. Ms. Kelly, are there any online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Are there any opponents in the room for House Bill 244? Seeing none. Ms. Kelly, do I have any online?
No, Mr. Chair.
While we're at it, do we have any informational witnesses online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Are there any informational witnesses in the room?
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, Cheryl Cohen, C-O-H-E-N. I'm the executive director of the Montana Board of Housing. And with the chair's permission, I have a handout that provides a summary of this account and some follow-up questions that we provided to House Appropriations.
Thank you. Go ahead and hand it to the senator, and we'll get that passed around for you. Committee, questions. Senator Zolikoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to pull a Representative Fern with a Representative Yakovich and say, what does this bill actually do? And the program.
Representative Zolnikoff, committee members. What this does is allow the fund to be able to use some funds that are presently restricted to a group of clients that are very difficult to reach eligibility-wise. So it would make the remaining monies and future monies available, and what they're trying to do within the board is reach a above 50% average income. And the reason that's important is it's just an easier loan package to get out. There are a lot of opportunities at that above 50% average wage, especially when you look into the multifamily housing. Also, there's been a lot of talk about affordable housing, workforce housing, this session. This is one of the funds that could be used if there are, for example, OTO money potentially going. This Housing Montana Fund may be an excellent home for it. So basically, more flexibility, getting the money out faster so it works faster in a more immediate fashion. And I would also, with your permission, redirect that question so that maybe some things I've missed can be answered by Director Cohen.
Yes, please. Can I do one more quick follow-up with you before that's redirected? Representative Fern, I understand this had challenges getting actually through the floor, though. So maybe it's a suggestion not to get any amendments on it if we do pass it, so you don't have to deal with the House floor again.
Senator Z and committee members, I think it went through very easily through the floor. Yeah, and it was unanimous in appropriations, and I think it would probably
97-3.
Oh, it was a very difficult 97-3 vote.
Point of order.
Sorry, misclarification. Representative, was that another bill, the abatement one that had challenges?
Senator, committee members, I have a bill that, if I'm fortunate enough, will be coming possibly to this committee or taxation committee that's dealing with the use of the coal trust fund. And that bill, I think, had about 68 votes. So,
okay. Well, I take it all back.
Senator Mandeville?
And maybe I'll now redirect if that's okay.
Can we do the redirect to clarify what this does?
Sure. Redirect.
Chair Zolnikoff and committee members. So in the handout that I provided, and I know it's been a very long day for you guys, so you might want to consider this some helpful bedtime reading aid. But it does go into the legislative history of the Housing Montana Fund. The Housing Montana Fund was established in 1999. And then 2 years later in 2001, the legislature established a sub-account to the Housing Montana Fund called the TANF account. And that first page on your handout, it talks about the TANF account. And it was set up with the idea of a $700,000 appropriations from DPHHS, and it gave the ability for the Board of Housing to provide loans to TANF-eligible families, TANF being temporary assistance for needy families. TANF-eligible families are quite low income. I believe it's based on 130% of the federal poverty level. And the account was set up to provide essentially down payment loans for TANF-eligible families for homeownership opportunities. The board partnered with multiple organizations to help deploy these funds, and we did deploy all $700,000 of that appropriation, and it was a revolving loan fund, so we continued to provide assistance. I think it was somewhere around $1 million in total. And then at the crash of the 2008 market and working with our partner organizations, the feasibility to provide down payment assistance loans to TANF-eligible families at that poverty level, it wasn't sufficient to really help them into a homeownership situation. And in fact, the Board of Housing and our partners were concerned that we were setting up families for a not financially feasible situation. So what this bill is proposing to do on page 1, line 22, you'll see the strike in subsection 2B, the money transferred. This is essentially striking out the portion of the funds that was established for that TANF account. And then in section 1, subsection 2, line 18, it says that that money is basically just going into the other portion of the affordable, of the Housing Montana Fund, which is a revolving loan fund for multifamily development use. So really all we're asking is that the 500 and some balance remaining in this account that isn't really well suited for what it was initially designed to do. We also administered all of those funds plus more. We also, out of that account, administered emergency rental assistance funds under the CARES Act with the prior administration's executive order to do so. So the account got a lot of great use out of it, but it's not functionally feasible anymore for the target population, and we'd love to put it to immediate good use to develop some more affordable housing with long-term affordability.
Thank you. Senator Mandeville?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for Ms. Cohen.
Ms. Cohen?
Chair, Senator Mandeville.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Cohen, I just want to make sure I understand what this does. It looks like it allows money you already have to be used for a wider range of option to meet a greater need, and the money's already there, so it does not appropriate any additional money. Is that true?
Chairman and Senator Mandeville, yes, that is absolutely true. And if you have any confusion on the fiscal note where it looks like a negative, that's just to reflect the fact that this will be a revolving loan account. So no impact on the general fund. We'll put it to good use.
Great. Thanks. I think this is a simple, great bill.
Any other questions?
Nope.
Seeing none, Representative, would you care to close on your bill?
What a wonderful hearing. Thank you, committee members. It is a simple, wonderful bill. It's taking money, not a ton of money, but we can put it to work right now that we can't easily use, $500,000 or so. And hopefully in the future, we'll be able to put a lot more money into this fund moving forward for more projects. But for now, let's just move this money and get it working. Thank you for the good hearing.
Thank you,
members. Yep.
This now in the hearing on House Bill 244. We will take executive action in the future. Committee, I got a couple questions for you before we head out. I apologize. But there's a couple things I need to talk about. We do not get Monday, so the problem we're going to run into is everything I scheduled for Monday will now either we will have a heavy Wednesday or we will be here on Friday, which means Good Friday will be something we sit here and do. So the question I have for the committee is I have, I believe, five bills. Do we want to have a heavy Wednesday, or do we want to be here on Friday?
So explain
nine heavy Wednesday. How many?
Right now we have four, right? Ms. Henneman, how many bills I have currently on?
Chair and committee, so currently we have five scheduled for Wednesday. There were four scheduled on Monday, so those four need to go and join the five on Wednesday, make nine, or go on Friday for four total on Friday, Mr. Chair.
Let's bring our dinner.
I'd rather go Wednesday.
I'd rather go, yeah. Maybe we could order pizza or something, too.
So if that's the pleasure of the committee, I will assign those five to Wednesday. If that is the case, then we will not be here Friday, as I know that we are taking, I believe, Friday off. So, or
trying to anyway, yeah.
So we will be here Friday as a floor, but we as a committee will not be here Friday.
So, Mr. Chair, did I hear you correctly that we have nine bills, therefore, to hear on Wednesday?
If I put those five we have that I need to take off of Monday, you are correct. We will have nine bills on Wednesday.
All right.
It seems like consensus is that we may burn the midnight oil on Wednesday just so we don't have to come in on Friday.
Mr. Chair, could we just voice vote a couple of those out, like the one we just had, and so we can keep moving? No? Or?
Let's do it on Wednesday.
Okay.
This is Friday.
Okay.
So... That being said, what was the other thing? We had another issue. Yeah, and what I'll do is I'll work with the my staff, and maybe take a Wednesday or so, or make an afternoon out of it or something for lunch on a Wednesday or a Friday or something before floor. Maybe we can bang out a bunch of house bills.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that being said, outside of that, so. That is what I will do is I will direct staff to go ahead and put those five bills on Wednesday, and we will just have the midnight oil. Sound like a deal? Anything else for the good of the committee? If you're heading home, drive safe. Meeting's adjourned.